It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes, fellow class warriors. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. David Masser, Executive Director of Penn Environment, going to be talking on our Tree Hugger Tuesday segment about the governor's latest signature on no more leasing of state land. No more forests for them to drill in. Until we figure out what's going on here. And I think this drilling issue here in the state of Pennsylvania, especially in the gubernatorial race, is a huge issue. It should be, in my opinion, the number one issue. Even though I do think that most people aren't getting it. They're not getting the fact that Twitter Tom is not going to tax them, is not going to push for a sane, rational, reasonable extraction tax, one that they've already put into their business plan. They're taxing us, and we're not getting it. That's the amazing part to me. The part that just sends me off the deep end is it's already in the price, because every other state in the country has an extraction tax. Every other state in the country gets something back from the resource being sucked out of their ground, except us. So we here in Pennsylvania, don't you feel special? I know as a Pennsylvanian now, I feel such love for corporate America that I want to make sure that they're taken care of. I want to make sure that, you know, they're not paying that pesky tax and they can put it at the bottom line. Make sure that their pockets are full. Make sure they get a little extra cheese on their Whopper. Make sure that, you know, the kids get an extra blanket at night, because we really got to worry about that. Oh, wait a minute. It's not them I'm worried about. It's us I'm worried about. Especially when you start talking about blankets. Because with winter coming and the price of energy going through the roof, why? Because we need more profit. We better start figuring out how to bundle our children up, because it's going to be a cold winter. So we'll be talking with David Masser, Executive Director of Penn Environment. Also, U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services, Kathleen Sebelius, will be here to talk about, the health care bill, a little bit about the election, a couple minutes with her. So that'll be good stuff. But, you know, I got to tell you, before we get really into this stuff, we get into the stomping and we get into, you know, the class war that's going on, and we get into some of the other stories I've got for you tonight. Are you just tired? Are you tired of being inundated with these nonsensical attack ads by these Republican front groups? Have you gotten to the point where you're just, I've just had it. If I hear, that's Joe Sestak, that's liberal, one more time, I'm going to scream. Because the admiral is no liberal. Look, I know liberal, and he's no liberal. I lived in a state with Howard Metzenbaum. Howard Metzenbaum walked around with a pink tie. That's how liberal he was. And Joe Sestak is no Howard Metzenbaum. Granted, there are really no Howard Metzenbaums in the U.S. Senate. Maybe Bernie Sanders. Maybe. But it just shows how far we've gone to the extreme right. How we've continually marched off to the fringe. And as far as the look, understand this. As crazy as you think the Rand Pauls and the woman who won't touch herself and Angle and Miller and Johnson and all Racy and all these way out fringe right wing people are right now, wait till next time. Because this has been a steady movement to the fringe. Because now they're starting to feel comfortable with saying, you know what? Those working people don't need a minimum wage. They don't need unemployment. They don't need workman's compensation. They don't need any of that stuff. They need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. And our chief chef here, he sent me over a cartoon from Gary Huck, which I just thought was absolutely hysterical. It was a Halloween cartoon where Frankenstein went to bend over to tie his shoes. Or you know, you could look at it as pull himself up by his bootstraps, and his brain fell out. So he's just kind of like perpetually stuck there, not knowing what he's supposed to do. You know, he can't reach the strings, just kind of stuck there. And I thought, you know, that's a good analogy for the Tea Party. Just stuck there. They're being funneled millions and millions of dollars in cash to prop them up, to make them think that there's something that they're really not. They're not a movement. They're a media construct. There's something that the billionaires said, hey, here's an idea. If we throw, at last count from McClatchy, they're saying $257
million.
$257 million, quadrupling the amount in the last midterm election. Quadrupling. Stop and think about that for a second. The amount of money that is just being poured in this. And look, the coffers are open. The very wealthy, they got their wallets out. And there's, you know, it's like dad on Friday night. You know, here you go, kids. You know, starting to keep doling out the cash. Because they think they've got it. They think they're going to take control. And it's as I've been saying, look, if they're willing to take money out of their pocket, if the Koch brothers and the Mars Foundation and all of these right-wing think tanks are willing to spend, what do you think they're going to get in return? What do you think they're expecting in return? Because we've all heard it. There's no such thing as a free lunch. There's no such thing as something with no strings attached. What comes with that cash? And I look right here in Pennsylvania. You got Tom Corbett running for governor who's taken this bizarre no-tax pledge. Taking $1 million from the natural gas industry, what do you think they expect in return? Well, what they expect and what they'll demand is no taxes. Don't raise the tax on us. You took the no tax pledge. And what that means is that all that money that they're currently taking in, because they are taking in the money that they should be paying in taxes, and it's going to their bottom line. All of that money just keeps filling their coffers. And you know what happens to that money? It's being pumped back into our election cycle. It's this perverted cycle that we've allowed to happen in this country. No thanks to the Roberts Court. And a little later on in the program, we're going to talk about the Roberts Court because I think I'm going to side with DeFazio here. It's time to maybe start looking at going after someone like Roberts on the court and impeaching him. Because if you remember his testimony, he said, "I stare decisis. I believe in decided law, calling balls and strikes. No activist judges here." Yet he overturned what, in many of my lawyer friends' words, are 100 years of decided law. And if you read what Breyer said, kind of a hanky way of how the Citizens United case got to them in the first place. So as all these ads are just inundating us, and all with these such flowery named groups, just some of the best groups that you can ever imagine, Americans for Puppies, and, you know, I Love America, or here's my Americans for No Food tax.
Feeding a family is difficult enough in today's economy. Now some politicians want the government telling me how I should do it. They want to put new taxes on a lot of groceries I buy, like soft drinks, juice drinks, sports drinks, even flavored waters. Trying to control what we eat and drink with taxes. Give me a break. I can decide what to buy without government help. The government is just getting too involved in our personal lives.
Tell the candidates, government needs to trim its budget fat and leave our grocery budgets alone.
Yeah, leave our grocery budgets alone. And you know, when I'm thinking out my grocery list, when I'm thinking of groceries, I'm going, oh yeah, I need soda, I need sugary soft drinks, I need juice, I need flavored waters. Yeah, that's right at the top of my absolutely must-have grocery list. That's right there with the staples. Right there. And, you know, I don't want some bureaucrat telling me how to feed my kids. I want to give them all the sugary crap I can stuff into them. I want to make sure they bounce off the walls and they don't learn anything. And I love this, some politicians. I love that. That's hysterical. But it's this anti-government rhetoric. Not the fact that all of this sugary stuff, and look, I am honestly and truthfully one of the people who should stop drinking soda altogether, but, and as I've said a number of times, I'm hooked. It's like an addiction. If there's a Soda Anonymous, I should be going. Because, you know, it is what it is, and which is why we don't even have it in my house. Because I don't want my kids getting hooked on it. Because there's a development stage. And I think, yeah, a sane, rational tax on this stuff should be a sane idea, right? Or am I missing something here? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Because, you know, I listen to that ad and I go, some politicians, they want to raise tax on my grocery bill. And I'm going, no, they want to help pay for the negative consequences that come from all this sugary stuff like diabetes. Since you look at the majority of people in this country who have diabetes are on Social Security and on Medicare. Didn't know that. 95% of all people who have an amputation due to diabetes on the back of we the taxpayers, Medicare. So, you know, when they say, well, we shouldn't have to pay for that, stop and think long term. Stop and think what this stuff has done. And I've read a couple of studies that have said, you know, look, there's a correlation. I'm not saying that Coke did it, but there's a correlation to the new Coke and the rise in obesity. Because one of the things that new Coke did, it brought high fructose corn syrup into American life. I mean, in full force, it had been there a little bit before, but it was really full bore after that. And now it's in everything, but you're not going to find high fructose corn syrup in anything anymore because they've gone and they've changed their name. It's no longer high fructose corn syrup. That sounds too technical and it sounds bad for you, like it could make you fat. No, we now have corn sugar. Doesn't that sound much friendlier? I know it sounds friendly to me. Corn sugar. Sounds wonderful. Just like all the other euphemistic terms that they use and the names that they use for their funny little front groups. Americans for puppies. Who could be against that? Americans for prosperity. Oh, we want prosperity for everyone. Americans for tax reform. And you look at the millions that they've spent on sending out these high glossy color cards that are just bombing my mailbox. I've gotten like 6 of them. I mean, stop and think about how much money they're pouring into this. And thank goodness people have a brain. So please, use it. And when we come back here in the next segment, I'm going to be talking again with David Masser. He's the executive director of Penn Environment. Today, Governor Rendell, like I said, signed a bill saying, you know what, we're going to hold off on allowing state land, state forests to be leased out for the drilling. Now, look, if Corbett comes in, the first thing he's going to do is he's going to overturn that. But that's his decision to do, and that's politically, we'll see how that plays out. I'm hoping it doesn't come to that. But let's take a quick break right here. We'll be right back with David Masser from Penn Environment. Stick around.
The Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka will be in Nevada Tuesday night for a get-out-the-vote rally in Reno in support of Senator Harry Reid. Trumka will detail Senator Reid's support for working people and the radical anti-worker views of his opponent. With the huge advantage of anonymous corporate money from outside groups, Reid's opponent is running strong in the polls. Trumka's Nevada appearance for Reid is part of a massive national AFL-CIO get-out-the-vote effort. Only one ship was serviced at the Port of Oakland on Saturday as workers shut the port down to protest at City Hall. Jesse Russell explains.
The Port of Oakland was closed by workers on Saturday as they protested in advance of sentencing in the shooting of Oscar Grant. The Longshore and Warehouse Workers Union have a long history of speaking out over concerns of injustice in the community. The workers protested in front of City Hall to call for justice in the case. They want to make sure Officer Johannes Maserly, who shot the unarmed Grant on a subway platform, is sentenced appropriately on November 5th, 2010, and that he doesn't receive any special treatment because he is a police officer. Supporters of a minimum jail sentence of 14 years for Maserly are concerned he will be sent home on probation and justice won't be served. Grant was shot on January 1st, 2009. The last time the workers closed the port to express an opinion was in 2008 to protest the war in Iraq.
An attempt to organize Jimmy John's sandwich shops in Minneapolis has failed by just two votes, 87 to 85. The Industrial Workers of the World had sought to represent the 200 workers at 10 Minneapolis stores who have complained of low wages. The shops that they specifically targeted are all owned by Mike Mulligan, who pays his workers the bare minimum federal wage of $7.25 per hour. The workers allege that management would require them to find their own replacement if they are sick, resulting in employees coming to work ill. According to the Center for Economic and Policy Research, the millions of French protesters who poured into the streets to oppose raising the retirement age are right. There's no need to raise the retirement age to afford their pension systems. Economist Mark Weisbrot says since France's retirement age was last set, GDP per person has increased by 45%. That productivity growth, he says, more than makes up for longer life expectancies and fewer workers supporting each retiree. And he says projected growth in France over the next 40 years is also expected to be more than sufficient to pay retirement costs without cuts. Weisbrot says it's a myth that adequate pensions cannot be sustained in France and other advanced economies. He says it's a social choice, and pension system cuts are not dictated by necessity. Weisbrot says it's perfectly reasonable to expect that as life expectancy increases, people should have longer retirements. This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association, the NEA, working for great public schools for every student.
Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Everybody, everybody, let's get into it. Get stoned, get it started, get it started.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. You know, this afternoon, the governor signed an executive order banning further leasing of state forests for Marcellus Shale natural gas drilling. Environmentalists, quite happy. Republicans, no response, really. They're just, it's just a symbolic effort because they know that Corbett can come in and overturn this if he so chooses. But I think it's important to talk about this because this issue, I think, should be the key issue in this gubernatorial race, my opinion. I've asked David Masser. He's the executive director of Penn Environment. Their web's pennenvironment.org to come on and talk to us a little bit about this afternoon signing. David, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us, just overview, what happened today?
Sure. The governor was in Philadelphia and signed an executive order banning any further leases from Marcellus Shale gas drilling in Pennsylvania State Forest System.
How much land is that? Is that all state land or is that just in forest land?
It's predominantly in state forest land. So it would be about 1.4 million acres that haven't been leased out, but, you know, probably about, about 900,000 acres of that actually falls within the Marcellus Shale region.
So what's that going to mean for the drilling companies going forward, do you think?
I don't think it will really affect them. Already, more than 40% of Pennsylvania state forest lands that fall within the Marcellus Shale have been leased out or are available for gas drilling. And that's a, you know, that's a big percentage within the state forest, but really most of the Marcellus Shale play is on private lands, and this obviously won't affect that. And if landowners wanted to lease their property for drilling, you know, throughout the Marcellus Shale, they could do that.
So let me ask you, what do you guys do at Penn Environment?
We are a citizen-based environmental advocacy group. So we work on state and federal environmental policy. We have about, you know, approximately 50,000 members and contributors and volunteers across Pennsylvania working to make sure that everyday citizens have a voice in the Capitol around some of these important environmental issues when we know industries, like in this case, the Marcellus Shale drilling companies, have well-heeled lobbyists. We want to make sure the public has a voice as well.
What message do you think that the Marcellus Shale people are getting out that maybe you guys can't? Because I got to tell you, I am being inundated daily by these soft, happy messages from Rain Resources and from the Natural Gas Coalition and all of these nice groups that want to tell me how wonderful they are and how great everything's going to be. I got to tell you, anytime somebody's trying to sell me roses like that, I got to wonder where the thorn is.
Yeah, I think this is sort of your traditional David and Goliath fight. You know, I think that we know we being the environmental community or nonprofit groups, concerned citizens, will be dramatically outspent by the industry who has millions of dollars and can do everything from run, you know, TV and newspaper and radio ads. They can make enormous contributions to our politicians in Harrisburg and Washington, D.C., and they can hire the top names to represent them and their issues in Harrisburg. As you probably saw recently, the industry hired our ex-governor, Tom Ridge, for a measly $900,000 to represent them. And, you know, I'm sure when legislators get a call from the ex-governor, they're probably more likely to return that call than they are when they get a call from David Mazur.
You know, and what frustrates me about this is you hear these messages, and I get this often from folks. You hear these messages, and we want to believe that they're true. We want to believe that there's a magic bullet out there. We're going to be able to pull all this resource out of the ground. It's going to be done completely safe. There are going to be no side effects, and we, the taxpayer, are not going to be required to clean up the mess when they're gone. There's some reality here that I think we must at least take a look at, and if you do nothing else but look at the coal industry and what's been left over from there.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, there are two points. One is with the coal industry, unfortunately, that legacy pollution that we have in Pennsylvania is something that will be cleaned up. Most legislators and experts believe it'll take more than 100 years based on current funding mechanisms to clean up that legacy of pollution, and most of that is paid for by taxpayers in Pennsylvania, unfortunately. And so I think there is that legacy, and it's a very fair comparison. I think on top of that, we have seen that with the Marcellus Shale specifically, it's exactly as you said. The industry said, you know, this is going to be the best thing since sliced bread, and the reality is, an industry that many consider in its infancy stages, we've seen really dire environmental, very negative effects. We have had there's seven counties where there's methane in people's well water from Marcellus Shale gas drilling. We had a big explosion in Clearfield County. The Pittsburgh area has had to issue a drinking water advisory for more than 325,000 local residents because the source water, the Allegheny River, was contaminated. We've seen spills in our state forests. You know, these are really, really serious problems. And I think if, as I've said before, if this is the sort of thing we see in an industry in its infancy stages, I can only imagine what we'll see when it reaches maturity.
When everything starts going full tilt, big boogie, I'm afraid of that as well. And one of the things I've talked to many legislators about is I think there should be a moratorium. I think we should have rules in place. We should have a sane, reasonable, rational severance tax in place. even before they put another needle in the ground, because one, they need to know what the rules of the game are, and two, we need to know how to deal with the problems that are going to come up over the next 50 to 100 years.
Yeah, I think that's true, and unfortunately in Pennsylvania, we probably should have followed the steps of the state of New York more closely to really figure out what we're dealing with and first make sure we do no harm and take sort of that precautionary principle. You know, in Pennsylvania, the genie's out of the bottle, and it's sort of hard to put the genie back in the bottle. But I think that there's such growing public concern about the pollution and potential public health effects from Marcellus shale drilling. You know, we see it all over the state, and it really crosses party lines. You know, I think if you look at something like the governor's event today, with his ban on Marcellus shale drilling or further leases on state forest lands, the state house passed a sort of a similar bill, but not as strong, a 3-year moratorium bill. And that bill had huge bipartisan support, more than 150 votes supporting it, which means about half the Republican caucus and most of the Democratic caucus voted for it. So I think, you know, we're really seeing growing concern that crosses party lines. You know, it's rural, it's urban, it's suburban. And the industry said, you know, that this will be the best thing ever for the state. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people are having buyer's remorse.
Yeah, we're having some problems here. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with David Masser. He's executive director of Penn Environment, their website, pennenvironment.org. We'll put a link over at our site at therickSmithShow.com. You know, David, you know, I look at this and I say, this is Pennsylvania's gold mine. This is the gold rush of years past. This is an opportunity to not only make a lot of profit for the companies, but also for the state. And I point to a state like Alaska, a good socialist state, that Alaska is. And I've got a relative who lives there and says every year we get a check back from the government for what they didn't use to run our government. I'm saying, and I'm not asking for that, but I'm saying we should at least get some money out of it for schools, since we're going to be changing our education system to meet their needs. We should be funding emergency response, since they're going to be using a bunch of that. We should be funding state health and state energy programs as well.
Yeah, I think that's all true. I think there's a great opportunity. And, you know, we see all sorts of states implement a similar severance tax, if it's Alaska or Texas or Oklahoma or West Virginia. You know, it's not like any of those states are really, you know, crazy hippie tree-hugging states. I mean, they're fairly fiscally conservative. They're run by fairly conservative legislators, and even they saw and have the foresight to implement sort of a common sense severance tax and use those funds, especially in such a hard economic time, to keep important social programs running in the state, environmental programs, making sure that the local communities, the host communities, if it's townships or counties, have funding to deal with road disrepair, you know, increased and fluctuation in local school populations, problems with sewage treatment facilities, all of these sorts of things. So it sort of feels like a no-brainer. So it's sort of unfortunate it takes so much vigilance on the part of the public to get such a common-sense policy passed.
Well, one of the things I've been saying that has to happen is we, the citizens of this state, have to come together. We have to organize, because we're not going to have the money. We're not going to beat them financially, and we're seeing that with all the ads, and we're seeing it with all the campaign contributions. We're never going to be able to fight back that way. But you got to fight back with your feet and your voices. And I'm curious, do you know of many or any attempts at organizing people to come together to try and fight back against this?
Yeah, I there are a slew going on. I mean, I think there are groups like Penn Environment and Sierra Club and Clean Water Action, and, you know, in cases of the severance tax, you have local county commissioners and township supervisors who are supporting it, and you have outdoor groups like Trout Unlimited who support it, and PSEA, the teachers union, want a severance tax. So, you know, they're really a very broad and deep set of organizations who are pushing to not only tackle this issue around the severance tax, but also, you know, the larger public health and environmental issues tied to Marcellus shale drilling. So you both have sort of these organizations that have been out fighting these sort of public interest fights for a long time, but then you also have really these local organizations popping up all over the state. It's sort of like a thousand flowers blooming. And, you know, if you go up to the northeastern part of the state and there's Damascus Citizens and other organizations that have popped to really deal with this issue as drilling is showing up in their backyard and really leaving some negative effects. But you really hit the nail on the head. I mean, I don't think we'll ever go dollar for dollar with these very powerful interests, but I do think, you know, we can sort of go vote for vote. You know, we know the public's with us, and they support things like a severance tax, and they don't want to turn on their tap and have the water come out, be contaminated. I mean, those are sort of very common sense things. So we don't have the money, but I do think we have the people on our side.
Yeah, at one point, I would have thought it would have been kind of nifty to have flames shooting out of my faucet. But now that I have three small children, I kind of worry about that.
Yeah, unless you have like a hot dog on a stick or something to prepare for that, it's probably not a very good idea.
Not at all. Let's go back to the signing of the executive order today. Is this a good thing, or is this something, as like I thought, the first thing that will happen if Corbett is elected, it'll be something that will be overturned almost immediately?
Well, I think it's a good thing. I mean, I think it's, is it the end-all be-all or a silver bullet when it comes to Marcellus shale gas drilling? Obviously, it's not. And, you know, I would hope whoever wins as governor would keep the ban on further leases in place and, you know, respect and keep the executive order intact. That being said, I do think that the political reality of today's event is if someone came in and if a governor came in and tried to repeal that, you know, they'd have to spend some political capital. It would be controversial. It would garner ongoing statewide press coverage. It would really, I think, anger a lot of the state's residents, particularly knowing that the industry already has 40% of state forest lands that fall within the Marcellus Shale region. So, you know, it's not the most profound policy probably, but that being said, if an incoming governor tried to repeal it, they would have to use some of their own political capital, because I do think that there would be, you know, a fair amount of scrutiny and repercussions for repealing it.
Yeah, at some level, I thought there would be some political capital spent on Republicans not passing something in the Senate before election time, but obviously that's not happening because, you know, they made a promise. They said by October 1st, there was going to be a severance tax in place. That was the budget agreement, and here we are, what, 25th, 26th? And I think they're, again, late. If I had a job where I was, you know, 25 days late, I think I would be fired.
Yeah, you know, and it is really disappointing because, as you said, these are elected officials who made a promise. I mean, this was written right into the summer budget agreement. And, you know, for whatever reason, they chose to do it by October 1st. So 4 weeks before the election when, you know, there's more public scrutiny about decisions being made in politics and at any time, probably during, you know, a 2 or 4 year cycle. They could have done it the easy way. They could have done it back over the summer, but they put it off and here we are. They're really reneging on that promise. And I think it's hugely disappointing. I think most of the press coverage has been very critical. And I know many of the, state senators, at least in my neck of the woods who are in the Philadelphia suburbs, if it's Bucks or Montgomery or Chester County or Delaware County, like Dominic Pileggi, you know, they're hearing from constituents. They're getting phone calls and letters and angry emails. And, you know, I think a lot of people see this and they think, you know, this is really why I have such a, you know, distaste for politics and politicians, because stuff like this happens. And this is what the public remembers, sadly.
Yep, I say they should give back the 25 days of pay that they've taken for not completing their job. That
yeah.
might send a message.
Last
question I've got for you.
Sure.
One of our listeners, they hear what we're talking about. They go, you know what? Makes a little bit of sense. I want to get involved. What advice would you give them?
Well, I have a couple of quick pieces of advice. If you care particularly about this issue or the issue of Marcellus Shale drilling, the quick thing you can do is call or email or write a letter to your local legislator. You know, if you're in Carlisle, that's Senator Pat Vance, and ask her to, you know, call on the leadership to go back in November and get the severance tax done and deal with this issue. I think the other thing concerned citizens can do is they can go to organizations like Penn Environment, go to our website, send us an email, say they want to volunteer or help out, and, you know, we always need more people to join the effort.
All righty. We'll make sure we get that up on our website, penenvironment.org. David Mazur, I appreciate your time. Thanks for the conversation.
Thanks for having me.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break right here. Right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Government off our backs. We're going to take our country back.
That sounds good, but is this the time for bumper sticker solutions? The Republican Tea Party, pledged to America, says cut taxes for the rich and cut government. Some have even said close the government down. Then what? Food and mine inspection gone? Forget about Border Patrol or keeping terrorists locked up. And returning veterans? Give them a cheap voucher instead of a quality VA hospital. Let's dump rivers and pollute the air again. The teabagger chanting, keep your hands off my Medicare. Sorry, Medicare will be whack hard. The same for Social Security. Schools, police, and fire departments will disintegrate. So Republican Tea Party folks, then what? We're all angry and frustrated. But when you vote, remember who got us into this mess in the first place.
Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees at AFGE.org.
The Chamber of Commerce attacks Joe Sestak for supporting good union jobs in Pennsylvania. Unbelievable.
The Chamber of Commerce gets millions of dollars from foreign corporations.
They oppose Social Security, Medicare, and overtime pay.
The Chamber of Commerce is against pension and retirement security.
And they support tax breaks for corporations that send our jobs overseas.
Joe Sestak supports our unions and our jobs because he's a true American patriot.
Thanks, Joe Sestak, for fighting for Pennsylvania jobs.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Well, jury selection began today, and the former Republican House Majority Leader Tom DeLay is the guy sitting in the hot seat. Turns out that they are actually going to try the hammer for laundering money, charged with laundering and conspiracy in 2005 for allegedly illegally funneling $190,000 in corporate money through the Republican National Committee to help get fellow Republican Texas legislators elected. Because why? Oh, yeah, so they could redistrict, and they could gerrymander the entire state so they could have a Republican majority. Sound like something that could happen again? Why do you think they're throwing all this money into it? Why do you think all this money's going into these Pennsylvania races? Why do you think all these attack ads? I'm telling you, folks, we are in deep, deep trouble. If on November you have a Republican governor, a Republican Senate, which we're going to have anyway, and a Republican House, if that happens, you will immediately lose one Democratic seat in this state. And they will gerrymander the other districts so that the Democrats cannot compete. Now, look, I don't care if it were the other way around. I don't care if it were the Democrats gerrymandering Republicans out. It's not right. There has got to be a sane, rational way of making where I live, if you look at the district that I live in, I am in the 9th congressional district. Schuster is my congressman. I am completely surrounded by the 19th district. Just my little development has been etched out. It's really kind of funny when you look at the map that it goes off on its own little thing and comes back. Why? Republican votes. That's how they gerrymandered it. That's how they rigged it up. So I'm telling you, there are consequences for elections. And if we're not paying attention, if we don't have our eyes on the ball, trouble ahead. I'm interested to see how this trial goes. I'm really interested to see how the hammer, how this trial goes down there in Texas. Because to be honest, Texas is not the greatest place in the world to be a defendant. Of course, unless of course you shoot two people in the back while on the telephone. Anyway, as we talked about in the last segment, the governor signed this executive order. No more state forests are going to be drilled in for a while. And what you've got now, you got these five Republican state senators who are asking their caucuses to, negotiate for a little more time. We need to get back in there and start fighting for the extraction tax. Again, another political ploy. Because the governor came out last week and said, you know what? It's over. The Republicans, they weren't coming to negotiate. They weren't coming to do their job. It's over. It's dead. The tax is dead. Which is why I think this election cycle, this gubernatorial race should be right on the front page, should be right on the top line, Marcella Shale tax. Because if they don't pay it, and I know the candidates won't tell you this, but I will. If they don't pay it, you will. Because you already are. And not only will you continue to pay the tax that they're taking from you anyway, you're going to pay additional monies for the protection, because you're going to need to have folks to come and clean up the mess. You're going to need first responders. You're going to need road crews to fix the roads, because a lot of the places where this natural gas is at was not made for heavy trucks. These are skinny roads and they're going back into nowhere. And you're going to pay for that. Your tax dollars are going to pay for that. And, of course, you got a guy who's running for governor who said, you know what? I'm not going to raise taxes. Oh, no, I would never raise taxes. No state taxes, no state fees. Never, ever, he said. Never, ever would he raise the fees. Never, ever. And I got to tell you, it's kind of interesting to me that someone would say never, ever without actually knowing what he's talking about. That's pretty funny stuff. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You look at this tax that they should have passed 25 days ago. 25 days ago, they said, we're going to have an extraction tax. It's going to be part of the budget. We've put money into the budget on future taxes that we're going to get once we do our job. Trust us. And this is part of why people are so frustrated and angry with government. This is why people have gotten to the point where they don't believe in it. And what I'm telling you, folks, it's not government. It's the party of no. When the Republicans came to negotiate, they knew what they were doing. They knew the answer was no. They got their marching orders before they walked in the door. Before they took their seat, the ink was dry on the campaign check. It was cashed in the bank. It was in their pockets. And I'm telling you right now, you find out who these people in the Senate were who did not vote for the extraction tax, which 80% of the people in this state think is a good idea, and you throw them out. Because if the natural gas people aren't paying the taxes, you are. Understand that. And when you've got Corbett saying no taxes, no fees, what then happens if the state doesn't raise taxes or fees? If there's no extraction tax on the natural gas, where do the revenues come from? How do we keep policemen? How do we keep firemen? How do we keep the roads clear? How do we keep seniors being cared for? How do we keep those who can't help themselves cared for? How do we keep paying for unemployment? How do we keep paying for welfare and Medicaid and all of the things, the CHIP program, health insurance for children? How do we keep doing that? How do we keep educating our children, our most precious resource? How do we keep doing that? How do we keep paying teachers? And I'm telling you right now, this state is in big trouble because smart people have left. The smart people are tired of getting beat up on. The people who do the work are going, you know what? This isn't worth it anymore. Every budget, I got to worry about losing my job. Now they're talking about, if Corbett gets in, and this will make the T-Twizzlers thrilled, but wait till your state and local taxes go up. Wait till your local taxes go up, and better yet, wait till the privatization goes up. Wait till the local government says, you know what? We can no longer plow the roads. You're going to have to get a private for-profit company to come plow your roads. We're only doing state routes and emergency routes. Wait till that happens. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about this because I think it's important. I think this is the important stuff. Where's it coming from? Where's it coming from, Twitter Tom? We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free consumer report by Calhoun Associates by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722.
If you look at the whole flock of 535 Congress critters, it's hard not to giggle or break out in uncontrollable sobs at the thought that, oh my God, this is the United States Congress. As Peggy Lee sang years ago, is that all there is? Well, no. Within the manure pile, there are quite a few genuine gems, and one of the finest is a fellow who consistently stands for common sense and the common good. He's Russ Feingold, U.S. Senator from Wisconsin. Russ is a Democrat, but really he's a populist maverick who has refused to go along to get along, even when that means going against his own party and against what the political consultants tell him is his own best interests. For example, he was the lone Senate vote against the autocratic Liberty-Busting Patriot Act in 2001. Feingold also has had the stuff to vote against Obama's escalation of the misguided war in Afghanistan. And not only did he oppose the 2008 bailout of Wall Street banksters, but he also said no this year to Obama's Wall Street regulatory reforms, blasting them as too weak and meek. So this sensible senator is now targeted for defeat by the moneyed elites. They found a multimillionaire corporate Republican who made a fortune in plastic to use confused Tea Party forces as a ramrod to oust Russ. The corporate contender taxed Social Security as a Ponzi scheme, calls health care reform the greatest assault on our freedom in my lifetime, and insists that the science of global climate change is unproven. If this guy gets any dumber, we'd have to water him twice a day. This is Jim Hightower saying, but he's a rich corporate honcho, backed by the moneyed power, so he could join the congressional manure pile, if we the people don't rally around one of our own. Connect with Russ Feingold at www.russfeingold.org.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
Where common sense, reason, and community come together. The Rick Smith Show.
Yes, that's what we have to do. We have to come together. We have to organize, you know, like we used to do in the old days. Neighbors talking to neighbors, friends talking to friends, coming together, standing together. Look, you know, the very wealthy, they've figured it out, man. They have figured it out. They put their money together. They have figured out this whole organization of capitalism. They know where to put their money, and they're buying politicians. I mean, look at, did I mention Tom DeLay's, the jury trial thing, ramping up today? Did I remember that? Did I mention that? The Hammer is going to be put on trial for illegally funneling $190,000 in corporate money through the National Republican Committee to help his buddies there in Texas get elected. I'm really interested to see how this works itself out. And what I think even more important we should be talking about is how to get the corporate money out of the election cycle. How do we get corporate money completely out of it? You look here in this state, the amount of investor class money that's gone into messaging, the amount of big billionaire bucks that are going into making the choices for us. You know, I've talked to some people recently who, you know, they admit they're not really paying attention. They're not reading the newspaper. They're not doing the work that is necessary to formulate an educated, informed opinion. They're just listening to the media. And one, first, they're turned off by all the negativity. They're turned off by all the attack ads. They're turned off by all of the, and this could backfire because the simple-minded can only take so much negativity before the head explodes. And they may turn against you, which is what I'm hoping is going to happen. I'm really hoping that all the money that's been just pounded into these elections, especially here in Pennsylvania, with Pat Toomey and Tom Corbett, who are the poster children for the corporatist model. You know, I had someone tell me, well, you know, Pat Toomey's a teabagger and he's a, you know, he's one of these Christian Coalition guys. And, well, I don't know. You know, Dick Armey said he was the first guy for the Tea Party. And, well, I don't know. Maybe that was just trying to give him a little street cred. What he is, he's a Wall Street guy. He's the greed guy. He's the money guy. That's Pat Toomey. He's anti-worker. He is, in my opinion, by being anti-worker, you're automatically anti-family. Because in order to have a strong family unit, you need to have a decent wage to support that family. You need to have health care to support that family. All things that our buddy there, not on board with us on. And I look at this election here, and it's showing that it's an even race between Toomey and Sestak. And I think the closer we get to the election, hopefully the more people are going to wake up. The more these negative ads come pounding in on us, the more we're going to wake up. And I'm hoping that in the governor's race as well. A lot of people have pretty much written off the gubernatorial race. I don't know. I think Honorado's got a shot, even though a lot of polls have him down by 5 or 6 points. But remember, in August, he was down by 15. So we're seeing things tighten up. And for me, going back to this extraction tax, and I know, it's almost like an obsession with me. But this is our gold rush. This is an opportunity in this state to create good paying jobs. And local jobs. And the only candidate that's talking about that is Dan Honorato. He's saying, look, I want to have Pennsylvanians doing those jobs. Why? Well, so they pay state tax, so that the money that they earn goes back into the local community, and you see that multiplier effect, where the money that they spend in Joe's barber shop gets spent in Sally's bakery shop, and so on down the line. Every dollar that's earned has a multiplier effect because it's spent and spent and spent and spent again in that community. And it stays in the community. When you have a transient workforce,
one that's maybe from, oh, I don't know, Louisiana or Wyoming coming in. They stay in a hotel, they eat pizza out of a box, and they send all the money back to Wyoming or Louisiana. And they could give a rat's behind about the environment because they know they're going back to Louisiana or Wyoming. It's not their kids getting flames shot out of them from a spigot. It's not their water that stinks. It's not their water that's contaminated. It's not their ground that's contaminated. What do they care? They're going back. But if you had a local employee, someone who, you know what? I got to worry that if my kid turns on the faucet at home, flames are going to shoot out. You bet he would think twice about what he's doing. And you guaranteed know that if something happened, he'd report it. You absolutely know that. That's why it's important to have a local craft. Because you cannot have transient labor coming through. You just can't have it. It's unsustainable. It's unsafe. And it's just bad policy. But that's pretty much what Corbett's been pushing for. No oversight. Let the industry do what it wants. And this is exactly what's gotten us into this mess. It's exactly what's gotten us into the situation where we're at. You name the industry, banking, the mortgage stuff, the auto industry, the trucking industry, the airline industry. Once we took the regulations off, once we took the safeguards off, once we said, you know what, gloves are off, do what you got to do, those industries went straight down. I mean, the trucking industry is a horrible example of policy gone awry. You know, the Republicans love to say, oh, well, you know, it allowed more people to get into the industry. Yeah, it allowed more sweatshop labor. It allowed people to live like gypsies in their trucks. You know, before deregulation passed, and I've talked about this before, before 1980, before Carter signed it and Reagan figured out how to put the pedal to the metal, 85% of the trucks on the road were union trucks. They paid a decent living. They had health care. They had some pension. They had rights on the job. Now, the majority of the trucking industry are independent contractors who are told they're their own boss, yet they work for a company, or they're leased off to a company. And they're still working as hard as they ever did. The difference is they're not making a decent living. And I know, and I've driven truck for years, and I've known many of an independent who's told me the same story. Look, I'm working harder and harder. Tolls are going up. Taxes are going up. Road calls are killing me. Fuel costs are killing me. The brokers are killing me. I'm not making it. But I got this truck payment. I got kids at home. I got to make the bills. And that's what's happened to this country. What used to be the American dream, the dream that my grandfather lived. When my grandfather and grandmother got married, they got married and lived in a car. Through their hard work, they lived the American dream. What we're seeing is kind of a going back on that. We're seeing, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about this. Because I think it's important to look at some of the facts that are out there. Not the platitudes, not the slogans, but the absolute hardcore facts. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. Stick around.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News, I'm Doug Cunningham.
AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka will be in Nevada Tuesday night for a Get Out the Vote rally in Reno in support of Senator Harry Reid. Trumka will detail Senator Reid's support for working people and the radical anti-worker views of his opponent. With the huge advantage of anonymous corporate money from outside groups, Reid's opponent is running strong in the polls. Trumka's Nevada appearance for Reid is part of a massive national AFL-CIO Get Out the Vote effort. Only one ship was serviced at the Port of Oakland on Saturday as workers shut the port down to protest at City Hall. Jesse Russell explains.
The Port of Oakland was closed by workers on Saturday as they protested in advance of sentencing in the shooting of Oscar Grant. The Longshore and Warehouse Workers Union have a long history of speaking out over concerns of injustice in the community. The workers protested in front of City Hall to call for justice in the case. They want to make sure Officer Johannes Maserly, who shot the unarmed Grant on a subway platform, is sentenced appropriately on November 5, 2010, and that he doesn't receive any special treatment because he is a police officer. Supporters of a minimum jail sentence of 14 years for Maserly are concerned he will be sent home on probation and justice won't be served. Grant was shot on January 1, 2009. The last time the workers closed the port to express an opinion was in 2008 to protest the war in Iraq.
An attempt to organize Jimmy John's sandwich shops in Minneapolis has failed by just two votes, 87 to 85. The Industrial Workers of the World had sought to represent the 200 workers at 10 Minneapolis stores who have complained of low wages. The shops that they specifically targeted are all owned by Mike Mulligan, who pays his workers the bare minimum federal wage of $7.25 per hour. The workers allege that management would require them to find their own replacement if they are sick, resulting in employees coming to work ill. According to the Center for Economic and Policy Research, the millions of French protesters who poured into the streets to oppose raising the retirement age are right. There's no need to raise the retirement age to afford their pension systems. Economist Mark Weisbrot says since France's retirement age was last set, GDP per person has increased by 45%. That productivity growth, he says, more than makes up for longer life expectancies and fewer workers supporting each retiree. And he says projected growth in France over the next 40 years is also expected to be more than sufficient to pay retirement costs without cuts. Weisbrot says it's a myth that adequate pensions cannot be sustained in France and other advanced economies. He says it's a social choice, and pension system cuts are not dictated by necessity. Weisbrot says it's perfectly reasonable to expect that as life expectancy increases, people should have longer retirements. This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association, the NEA, working for great public schools for every student.
Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Tell you, right now is the time to be pushing this. Right now is the time to be talking about it. Right now is the time to come together and fight back. I've been doing this program now. We're in our sixth year here. I've been talking about this fight that's been brought to us in the working class. We didn't ask for it. We didn't ask to be attacked at every turn. We didn't ask to have our wages stagnant. We didn't ask to be given credit cards instead of wage increases. Didn't ask for any of that. What we wanted to go to work, we wanted to work hard, and we wanted our work to pay. And we wanted to be able to support our families and have a little security in old age. I don't know that that's too much to ask. I really don't. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, or you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. There was an interesting piece written over at Truth Out that the guy went through, and it's not stuff that we didn't already know. It's stuff that we all know, but he just did a nice job of putting it together. And he says socialism with a question mark. The rich are winning the U.S. class war. Facts show rich getting richer, everyone else getting poorer. Bill Quigley writes, the rich and their paid false prophets are doing a bang-up job deceiving the poor and middle class. They have convinced many that an evil socialism is alive in the land, and it is taking their fair share. But the deception cannot last. Facts say otherwise. Yes, there is a class war, the war of the rich on the poor and middle class, and the rich are winning, according to Bill Quigley. That war has been going on for years. Look at the facts. Facts, the rich and their false paid prophets don't want people to know. Now understand, all of these euphemistically named groups, Americans for Prosperity, Freedom Works, all of these groups funded by billionaires. So what they're pumping out is really not in your interest. And you look at somebody like Glenn Beck, who really not your buddy, not your teacher, not your prophet, none of that. He is a well-paid mouthpiece. He goes on ad nauseum about socialism. Limbaugh rails about class warfare for a leftist agenda to destroy our society. Mr. $50 million a year, the defender of corporate America. And Quigley calls these people false prophets. False prophets for the rich. And they are. They're their mouthpiece. Quigley goes on to say, the truth is that for several decades, the rich in the U.S. have been getting richer and the poor and middle class have been getting poorer. Look at some of the facts and make up your own mind, he says. Right now in this country, we have more poor people than we've had in 51 years since they've been keeping really the numbers. 14.3% or 43.6 million people living below the poverty line. One in five children below the poverty line. One in five children. You know, when I spend time and we go to the food bank, because my wife does work for Project Share, one of the food banks in the area, and you see the number of families that come to the food bank. And look, there's nothing wrong with going to the food bank. You need something, you need it. And they're there to help. And what I love about Project Share, and this isn't really a commercial for them, but what I love about them is that you can keep your dignity by going in and saying, you know what, I want to do a day's work. I want to be compensated for my work. I want to work for you. And they'll put you to work helping others. And I, that's what I think is fantastic about that program over there. And they're doing some great work. Think about this. One in five children are in poverty. One in five. One in ten senior citizens are in poverty. Only one in ten. Think about that for a second. Only one in ten. And why is that? Because they have a floor. We've got Social Security in this country that says, you know what, Granny? We're not going to let you starve to death. We're not going to let you freeze to death in the winter. We're going to help the least among us. At least our senior citizens. Children, maybe a different story. He goes on to point out that one in every six workers, 26.8 million people, is either unemployed or underemployed. 17% of the population. 14.8 million people are collecting unemployment benefits right now. 9.6%. And remember what Bush said when he was handing out billions of dollars?
A robust package of at least $550 billion in across-the-board tax relief. We will help create more than a million new jobs.
Where'd those jobs go? Did they create those jobs? And how do I get one? You know, we hear the Republicans saying, well, you know, if you do the math, and you take the $814 billion that Obama spent, because he said it was going to create jobs. If you take that, it's $400,000 a job that he actually created. I've heard him say it. If you divide it, because they've created a couple million jobs, if you divide that into what? They're claiming it's like $400,000 a job. Well, if Bush is right, he gave away $550 billion to the top 1% and to the very wealthy to create a million jobs that never came to fruition. But those were $550,000 apiece. Can I have one of those? Even if it's for 1 year. I'm not greedy. 1 year would be great with me. And I'll even pay, 35% tax. Even more than the very wealthy in the country are paying. Oh, you know what? I'll be generous. I'll pay 50% tax. See how generous I am? But those jobs never happened. The tax cuts that Bush handed out, all the money that he threw to his buddies, to his cronies, never created any jobs. Didn't do it. And now we're hearing people talking about doing the exact same thing. I mean, Bush's words.
Package of at least $550 billion across-the-board tax relief. We will help create more than a million new jobs.
You know, and I love the analogy that I've heard. If you give a rich person a tax cut, they go on vacation. If you give that tax cut to a consumer, there's a job created. Because a consumer is going to go spur some demand. So for me, this discussion about extending the Bush tax cuts is a no-brainer. Extended for everyone except the top 2%. Sorry, you guys have got enough. And yes, that is class warfare. I'm fighting back. I've chosen to fight back. Because in this country, what we've got is we're turning into a society of those who have and those who don't. And if you think you're doing all right today, you know, you're making 100 grand a year, maybe you're making 200 grand a year. I'm not talking about you. You're doing all right. You're middle class. I'm talking about the people making 10, 20, 50 million dollars a year. I'm talking about somebody who made $4 billion this year. At a time when in this country, there are more than 50 million people who have no health insurance whatsoever. At a time in this country when women have a higher risk of death during pregnancy than women in 40 other countries. You remember that conversation about we're number one? We got the best health care in the world. If you can afford it. If you're a poor pregnant woman in this country, shame on you. Shame on you. So we're talking about giving the very wealthy a whole bunch of money. There's a boatload of money for the very wealthy at a time when we got 3.5 million people who are homeless, a third of those children. 49 million people. 49 million people in this country eat only because they have food stamps. They visit food pantries. They visit soup kitchens. We've got 49 million people who need food stamps or they need help just to eat in a country that has someone who made $4 billion. And he's going to pay 15% flat tax on that. Is that right? Well, you know, our friends on the fringe will say, well, it's America. It's America. Freedom. No, it's greed. The same kind of greed that got us into the mess that we're in now. The same kind of greed that has allowed our infrastructure to crumble. You know, if these were smart business people, if the people who were running our banks and our investment houses, people who were writing the mortgages, if these were smart people, they would understand in order to keep the gravy train going, you had to do some smart thing. Make sure you don't steal so much that the system collapses. Make sure you're not incompetent so much that the system collapses. And I'm not saying they were incompetent. They knew exactly what they were doing. From top to bottom, they knew exactly what they were doing. They were gambling because they knew we would have to, because we would have no other choice, bail them out. But is that the country we want to live in? You know, just a generation, maybe two generations ago. And I think of my grandparents. My grandfather, you know, worked all the years of their marriage up until he retired. My grandmother went to work once the kids were almost out of high school. She stayed home with them during their formative years, which is what my wife and I are doing, but we're struggling to do it. We're not having the ease that my grandparents had. Because we value a parent at home. I do believe there should be one parent at home during the elementary and middle school years to help with homework and security and to have someone there. I do believe that. And I think as a society, we should encourage that, like other societies do around the globe. In fact, other countries say, you know what? We believe in family values. In fact, one of you can stay home with the child for 2 years, and we're going to pay you to stay home. In this country, we got the Family Medical Leave Act, and everybody was jumping for joy. Woo-hoo! We really got something. What'd you get? Most people can't afford it. Most people can't afford it. And I ask the question, are my children going to enjoy the same standard of living that I've had as we continue down this road? You know, in 1967, the middle 60% of households controlled 52% of the income. The middle class. controlled 52% of the income. In 1998, that was down to 47%. It was down to 47%. And I would argue it's down much further today. The share going to the poor has also fallen. The top 20%, they've been seeing their share rise. We're seeing a redistribution of wealth, and we've been seeing it for 30 years now. But where were my teabag friends then? Where was the anger? Where was the outrage? And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the record number of foreclosures this past year. And maybe talk just a little bit about why. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Or you can email me, Rick, at therickSmithShow.com. We're right back after this. Passing out free condoms to prevent the spread of AIDS. All this promiscuity, and I still can't get in. I'm busy being right, so I won't get left behind. God is a Republican.
Officially in love with Michelle Bachman, even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith.
Get government off our backs. We're going to take our country back.
That sounds good, but is this the time for bumper sticker solutions? The Republican Tea Party Pledge to America says cut taxes for the rich and cut government. Some have even said close the government down. Then what? Food and mine inspection gone? Forget about Border Patrol or keeping terrorists locked up. And returning veterans? Give them a cheap voucher instead of a quality VA hospital. Let's dump in the rivers and pollute the air again. The teabagger chanting, keep your hands off my Medicare. Sorry, Medicare will be whacked hard. The same for Social Security. Schools, police, and fire departments will disintegrate. So Republican Tea Party folks, then what? We're all angry and frustrated. But when you vote, remember who got us into this mess in the first place.
Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees at AFGE.org.
If you look at the whole flock of 535 Congress critters, it's hard not to giggle or break out in uncontrollable sobs at the thought that, oh my God, this is the United States Congress. As Peggy Lee sang years ago, is that all there is? Well, no. Within the manure pile, there are quite a few genuine gems, and one of the finest is a fellow who consistently stands for common sense and the common good. He's Russ Feingold, U.S. Senator from Wisconsin. Russ is a Democrat, but really he's a populist maverick who has refused to go along to get along, even when that means going against his own party and against what the political consultants tell him is his own best interests. For example, he was the lone Senate vote against the autocratic Liberty-Busting Patriot Act in 2001. Feingold also has had the stuff to vote against Obama's escalation of the misguided war in Afghanistan. And not only did he oppose the 2008 bailout of Wall Street banksters, but he also said no this year to Obama's Wall Street regulatory reforms, blasting them as too weak and meek. So this sensible senator is now targeted for defeat by the moneyed elites. They found a multimillionaire corporate Republican who made a fortune in plastic to use confused Tea Party forces as a ramrod to oust Russ. The corporate contender attacks Social Security as a giant Ponzi scheme, calls health care reform the greatest assault on our freedom in my lifetime, and insists that the science of global climate change is unproven. If this guy gets any dumber, we'd have to water him twice a day. This is Jim Hightower saying, but he's a rich corporate honcho, backed by the moneyed power, so he could join the congressional manure pile, if we the people don't rally around one of our own. Connect with Russ Feingold at www.russfeingold.org.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current. Even a dead fish can go with the flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Well, that's what's going on. The very wealthy in this country have figured out how to pick our pockets, how to redistribute the wealth from us to them. And you know, that's one of the things that just drives me nuts. If you want to join in on this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, or you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. One of the things that just drives me nuts about this, I hear my T-Twizzler friends going, well, you're Obama, he's talking about redistributing wealth. What do you think has happened the past 30 years? As, you know, from the end of World War II, productivity and wage growth followed the same path. And then Reagan took office and it started to go apart. We started to see productivity continue to rise and rise and out of sight numbers, and wages stagnate off. And instead of wages, what they gave us credit cards because they want to put you in debt. And you look at what's going on. This, in 2009, there were 2.8 million homes that received foreclosure notice. 2010, the rate is expected to exceed 3 million homes. There are 11 million homeowners right now who are underwater in their mortgages. That means they owe more on their mortgage than the house is worth. And why did that happen? I had an interesting conversation with a friend who happens to be a bank president. And he was saying, look, at the end of it, it was all greed. It was greed. Nobody told these bankers to do the things that they did. They knew from top to bottom. They knew what they were doing was speculation. They were gambling. And we're not out of the woods here. You know, the more I'm reading about what's going on with the mortgage industry, the more I'm convinced that there has to be a government takeover of the big banks. We have to split them up. We have to re-regulate them, and we have to use, you know, if we've got to dig up Teddy Roosevelt, I'm in favor of that. I'll bring the shovel. We got to find somebody, a trust buster of some sort, who's going to go and break these mega banks up. Because in looking at just the preliminary readings that I've done, a good number of our mortgages are in big trouble because, one, they may not know where the paperwork is. They bundled it into these securities that, you know, they just bundled a whole bunch of things together. Maybe they were good, maybe they weren't. A large number of them, I think 43% of them were bad. Up to 60, 65% of them bad. That they've bundled into these things and they sold them off with a solid rating. And investors bought this stuff. And now what's kind of coming around is they're saying, you know, maybe they're going to sue the banks. Maybe they're going to go after them and get their money back. And this guy, John Malden, he writes an interesting piece that I've just come across, and I'm just digging into it, but one of the quotes that grabbed me, he said, quote, all those subprime and alt-A mortgages written in the middle of the last decade, they were packaged and sold in securities. They have had huge losses, but those securities had representation and warranties about what was in them. And guess what? The investment banks may have stretched credibility about those warranties. And there is the real probability that the investment banks that sold them are going to have to buy them back. We are talking the potential for hundreds of billions of dollars in losses that will have to be eaten by the large investment banks. And he's saying, look, there are all of these out there. And the people who have been cheated, the people who have been defrauded, they're going to have recourse. And I got to be honest, I'm interested to see how this is all going to play out, because the government can't, you know, they can't just say we're going to give the banks amnesty again. They I don't believe that they can, without real fear of revolution, I don't think that they can say we're going to wipe the books clean, but I also don't think that they can give people their houses either. And as my friend said, he's like, look, you know, if you rob a convenience store and you get caught, but the detective who arrested you you know, fudged a bunch of the documents and didn't bother to fill out the right paperwork and, you know, did some shoddy things and your lawyer finds it. What generally happens in our legal system? And I answered, well, chances are they throw the case out. And he said, such should be what happens with these mortgages. You know, if the person who had the higher standard, the bank, the person who was guaranteeing these things, who was putting the warranty on these things, if they knew this stuff was fraudulent, they should be held to it. They should be held to account. And what's amazing to me, and I hear this from my T friends, who love to go back and say, well, you know, Rick, it was irresponsible people. It was the Community Reinvestment Act. It was the CRA. That's what it was. It was those people who took out loans that they knew they couldn't pay back. It was those people. Well, you know, a portion of it. But the bigger part of this, and the part that's really the biggest part of the tree, is on Wall Street. The fact that they packaged these things in such a way that they were sold 10, 20, 1,000 times. In the blink of an eye, they're all over the place. That more than one person could have a claim on your mortgage because it's been sold so many times. The paperwork has been so diluted. It's a mess. And this is what happens when you have no oversight, when there are no rules. This is what happens when there's no cop. For you people driving up and down I-81, if there wasn't the thought that there might be a cop sitting in the middle of the road there, how fast do you think people would be going? If there were no speed limit signs, how fast would people be going? If there were no stop signs, there were no lights, how many accidents would you have? You'd have chaos, which is what happened in the banking industry. Only the chaos was an inside game. How can we fill our pockets at the expense of someone else? How can we load up on the good stuff for us, but stick it to the next guy? How can we, and the best way I heard it, a chocolate covered turd. That's what these mortgage-backed securities were. They bundled a whole bunch of them. And I think the number I read was 43% of them were bad. Almost half of them were bad. Almost half of the investment was bad. And what's amazing to me is they knew they were bad. The people who kept pushing them back. Because they'd only take a sampling. So if you sent them 1,000 mortgages bundled up in one investment tool, send them 1,000. They'd pull out 5%, maybe 50 of them. Maybe 100. And they'd send back the ones that were bad. And they'd take the rest. So what you'd do, when those ones that came back, you'd send them in with the next bunch of 1,000. And they'd go through 50, maybe 100, and they'd send a couple of them back. And then you'd throw them out there a third time. And a fourth time, and you just keep sending them back until, you know what? The odds are you're on your side. If they're only pulling 5%, 10% at the max, if they're only pulling that many, you got a shot at getting them through. It's kind of like our trade policy with the Chinese. You know, they send us rancid fish. The ones we catch, we send back, and they just recreate it up, send it back to us. So now it's another week old. It's worse off than it was, but it gets in. And yet we seem to think that these corporations, these big banks, they're going to police themselves in their own best interests, which is one of the things that just drives me absolutely bonkers when I talk to Tea Party people who want to support the unleashing of business to do whatever business wants to do. Look, I'm not anti-business. I'm anti-unfettered laissez-faire. I'm anti-allowing monopolistic tendencies to take over. And that's what we've allowed to happen. We've allowed these companies to act in their own interest. And what their own interest is as much short-term profit as humanly possible. Never mind the consequences, because we've allowed the banks to get so big that they knew they couldn't fail. They knew what they were doing was on such a large scale that it would be impossible for the government not to step in and help. And look, I hated it. It ate at me for weeks. And initially, my gut reaction to it and my visceral reaction to it was no. Hell no. Let these bankers go down in flames. And then I started to listen to people in the room who were saying, well, you know, here's the problem with that. If they go down, it's like putting a basketball-sized hole in the bottom of a rowboat. We're all going down with them. If you allow the banks to collapse, the credit lines collapse. Every business in this country survives on a credit line from when their product is produced to when it's sold to when they get the money back. They still got to pay their employees every week. It's that bridge between when that product sells and the money comes back into the coffers. And had we allowed those credit lines to freeze, no telling what would have happened. Let's take a quick break right here. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better. Or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Hello, I'm David Philman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. A union of over 1.4 million strong and growing, AFSCME is gaining improvements in the workplace all across America. And right here in the Commonwealth, more than 95,000 AFSCME members make Pennsylvania happen. Highways, libraries, hospitals, parks, offices, prisons, classrooms, museums, courtrooms. You'll find AFSCME members at work in all these places and many more.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
Today's AFSCME members take on public service jobs as diverse as they are, not for the recognition, but for a better Pennsylvania. For more information, please visit our website at AFSCME13.org. Labor is changing. So is your labor union. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happen!
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Or remember, check out our website at thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails, so you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. We do appreciate the emails and interesting stuff, interesting conversations we have with folks. I don't know if you've heard, but today began the trial of the hammer. Tom DeLay is on trial for laundering and conspiracy. No, he didn't go to the laundromat and do his laundry. No, he was washing a bunch of money through the National Republican Committee there to help elect Texas legislative candidates when they took over in 2002 to redistrict. So I can't wait. I'm hoping for the judge's gavel to fall and the hammer to fall, to see DeLay whimper and weep and do the perp walk. Make him walk like an Egyptian. So I guess we got to get to it. Stompergate, if you will, before the Rand Paul Jack Conway debate, which I got to be honest, I sat and I watched the other night when I got home from the show, and just watching Rand Paul's demeanor, watching his behavior, I have concluded that there is no one on this planet more deserving of a good backhand than Rand Paul. There is no one more deserving of a good slap across the head than that guy. You want to talk about arrogant, pompous, you know, there are a bunch of colorful words to go with it, but that not on radio. I got to tell you, this guy is going to be a gem to watch in the Senate because it looks like he's probably going to win because Conway is just such a bad candidate. But anyway, before the debate, he gets out of his very large SUV and he's led into the debate when one of his supporters jumps this woman, throws her to the ground, and another guy stomps on her head. And these are the good Christian people. They got their good "I love Rand Paul" buttons on. And, you know, I wonder what the radical fringe will do if they ever take control. I wonder what they'll do if they don't get their way. The public information officer for the Lexington Division of the Police Department told Talking Points Memo that they're investigating it and no charges have been filed. The attack happened to this woman, Lauren Vale, or Valley, V-A-L-L-E, who was interviewed at the scene for about 20 minutes, and none of the suspects, because they had pretty much booked. They disappeared like the cowards that they are by the time the police arrived. And what's funny is after we find out who they are, well, you know, if the police had stopped it, we wouldn't have had to do what we done did. And the woman suffered a concussion and some sprains to her shoulder and her arm as a result of the stomping. And the first thing that popped into my head, I see the T-Twizzlers walking with a yellow flag that says, "Don't tread on me." But stomp on that woman is okay. Kind of wondering about that. So if someone can help me with that, 1-888-520-RICK, explain to me how that's okay. It's okay to, and he did. He really stepped on this woman's head. So here's High Tops. Mr. I'm so big and bad, I'm going to step on a woman's head while one of my goon brethren hold her down. The AP reports that the Rethuglican, who is such a man's man that he ran like a little girl after stepping on the girl's head, turns out not to be some fringe nutcase, not to be some, you know, backwood kind of guy. No, he was actually Rand Paul's campaign coordinator in Bourbon County, Kentucky. So get ready for the crocodile tears. The Glenn Beck tears are about to come. I'm sorry it came to that. I apologize if it appeared overly forceful, but I was concerned for Rand's safety. I was concerned. You know, a friend of mine, he went up and he told three policemen before Rand got there, but they told him nothing. And they told him about the girl who was standing there with the wig and all. And she was getting ready to do something. We knew it. Police looked at him and said, "That's not our job. So it's their fault." You buying it? I'm not. I'm not buying it at all. You know, I've been to a number of these heated exchanges. I've been to a number of these kind of events where tempers have flared. And at no point have I raised a hand, pushed anyone. And I think the second that it turns to that, the law has to come down. And it has to come down hard. And Mr. Prophet is his name, which is kind of ironic. A Republican operative named Prophet. The first thing I thought is he the prophet come from of to deliver us? I haven't decided. So if you've got a thought on that, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, or email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. But I look at this Rithuglican, and that's what he is. He's a thug. And I'm looking at this girl, and I'm going, you know, that guy would have grabbed me and started pushing me to the ground. I'd have broke his arm. I wouldn't have played the good victim. The guy with the foot, I'd have twisted that into a pretzel. And this is what happens when you allow people to lay hands on each other. It's your right to do whatever you want to do until your right infringes on mine. And one of the things that I was thinking about, one of the Rithuglicans, and this is kind of hysterical. He was one of the guys who threw her to the ground. He was the guy who belongs to the Lexington Rand Paul meetup group and is an insistent organizer for Kentucky Open Carry. They're a group that wants to make it legal to carry firearms in public. Now, look at how he acted. Is this the kind of person you want walking around with a firearm? Because I got to be honest, we had that whole gun talk here, and I don't really want to get into a whole gun discussion if I don't have to. But I was thinking about this girl that they threw to the ground, and one of these big burly guys took this girl and threw her to the ground while this other thug stepped on her head. And I'm thinking, if she had a gun, could she reach into her pocket and, given our new law here in the state of Pennsylvania, the Castle Doctrine, could she shoot both of them on the street? Because after all, she was in a place that she was legally allowed to be in, and she was in imminent danger. I mean, you got these two Rithuglicans, stepping on her head and holding her down. And what if the guy who wants the open carry pulls his gun? We could have a good old-fashioned shootout. Yeehaw! And wouldn't that be a good ad to put on TV? Good old-fashioned shootout right there? See, my problem with that is I'd be the guy standing across the street, having a hot dog or, just looking at a newspaper or who knows what, and I'd be the one to get shot by both of them. But this whole thing, this whole stomper gate, if you will, nuts, just plain nuts. So far, the only punishment that's happened is the one Rithuglican can no longer come to the Rand Paul meetings. They're not. They've kicked him out of the club. Can't come to the clubhouse. That's it. Which I'm sure is going to devastate him because he had one of those little fanny packs on, one of those little girly kind of fanny packs. This big burly, Mr. Tough Guy. I'm Mr. Rand Paul T. Twizzler with a little fanny pack, with his little Rand Paul stickers all over him. He looked like a walking billboard. So this guy's crashed. Because Rand don't love me no more. I can't get me no more Rand. Because he woke up every morning with Randy on his mind. And now he's gotten the shaft. He thought he was just protecting the man. He was Secret Service. Took it upon himself. Amazing stuff. See, this is what happens when crazy is center. When crazy is allowed to be front and center. This is it. And it's scary stuff. Look, I understand passion. I understand getting excited. But I got to tell you, it's not. So what I loved is I loved Rand Paul's statement.
Everybody to be civil. We want this issue, the campaign to be about issues.
We want everybody to be civil, but one of our guys just stomped this poor woman. No big deal. That's all right.
I'll tell you that when we arrived, there's enormous passion on both sides.
Yeah, there's passion. There's a difference between where passion takes over and you throw a young girl to the ground and step on her head. And this is the other thing I loved, what Rand had to say.
It was a bit of a crowd control problem.
That's how she got thrown to the ground. You got to love that rationale. And the guy, you know, the guy who stepped on her head, he goes, well, you know, it appeared much worse than it really was. See, well, it appeared much worse. Yeah, a young girl being thrown to the ground, that, you know, that always looks much worse than it really is. And really, honestly, truthfully, that guy could make the argument that, you know, he was just trying to hold her back, and somebody pushed him, he tripped, and they fell together. But Mr. Prophet here, our Rathuglican, him stepping on her head not once but twice because he wanted to get a good step in there, he has no excuse. And I think jail time would be good for him. Help with a little self-analyzing, maybe some deep soul searching. Find out what makes someone like him assault a young girl. Amazing, amazing stuff. Let's take a quick break right here. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Loved one has suffered a workplace injury. Don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free consumer report by Calhoun Associates by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of the seven deadly sins that can destroy your Pennsylvania workers' compensation case by visiting pa-workers-comp-lawyers.com or calling 717-695-4722.
The Chamber of Commerce attacks Joe Sestak for supporting good union jobs in Pennsylvania. Unbelievable.
The Chamber of Commerce gets millions of dollars from foreign corporations.
They oppose Social Security, Medicare, and overtime pay.
The Chamber of Commerce is against pension and retirement security.
And they support tax breaks for corporations that send our jobs overseas.
Joe Sestak supports our unions and our jobs because he is a true American patriot.
Thanks, Joe Sestak, for fighting for Pennsylvania jobs.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Yeah, they're watching you. They're watching you, all right. You're going to step on your head. Yeah, I'll be honest. I was looking at this poor girl, and I'm going, one, never let anybody take you to the ground. But, you know, after I saw it, my executive chef here, he's telling me, no, what you got to do is you play along. See, you, me, I would have screwed that all up. I would have fought back, and we'd have probably all gone to jail. And it would have just been a couple of dummies who got into a fight. That's probably how that would have played. But the fact that this girl went down and she was really, really an honest victim, thrown to the ground, her head stepped on. She probably could have played it a little bit better afterwards instead of smiling and saying that they didn't treat her very well. You know, maybe some blood, maybe some tears. You know, because a Republican would have never missed the opportunity for that. Because a Republican never misses the opportunity to exploit a good crisis. Amazing stuff. Mike Lux over at Open Left had an interesting bringing together. Again, another one of these scenarios where it's stuff we all know. It's just put together. It's just we've gathered it all up, put it in one place, simple stuff. He writes, thugs. He says, as someone who reveres American democracy, I find it quite frightening. He points out several violent acts by our Constitution-loving friends on the lunatic fringe. Here's just a few examples from the current era. Remember Joe Miller here recently? His paramilitary security guards who handcuffed some guy to a chair because he wanted to ask a question. They grabbed him, threw him in a chair, and handcuffed him to a chair just for wanting to ask a question. You remember not too long ago a bullet shot through the window of Representative Gavala's campaign office? Obscene threats delivered into his office as well. Remember that? Representative Perello, his gas line was cut to his house. They cut the guy's gas line. It's a good thing he's not a smoker. Probably would have blown the neighborhood up. Republican congressional candidate Alan West, using a motorcycle gang known for violent criminal activity for security, and then gang members actually harassing and bullying Democratic staffers who were trying to videotape the event. I mean, think about this for a second. I mean, what kind of a thug are you? Go, I'm going to have the Hell's Angels protect my, do my security. There'll be none of those macaca moments there like George Allen had in Virginia. There'll be none of that. We've seen vandalism and assassination threats at congressional members during that health care fight. Look, I mean, you know, I do talk about the Tea Party a lot, and I have people who email me and say, hey, you know, Rick, these people are deadly serious. You shouldn't be taunting the crazy people. Don't play with the nuts. Am I allowed to say that? Am I allowed to say that on the radio? I guess it depends on the context. But I try not to play with the nuts. But they're there, and you've got to point it out. Maybe only if I were Christine O'Donnell I wouldn't. Anyway, you remember the doctor in Kansas who was brutally murdered coming out of church? Because he performed abortions coming out of church. But if you listen to the far right, it's only them Muslim people. Them Muslim people, they're the terrorists. They got a terrorist problem. Them they're Muslims. Remember the guy, the Holocaust Museum, went in and shot up the place a little bit? He was all fired up because Limbaugh and Beck got him all tight in the panties there. Remember the lunatic who shot up the highway, was going after the Tides Foundation because Beck showed him the way, laid it all out there for him? I mean, stop and think about it. There's some very, very real consequences out there to some of this crazy stuff. Throwing a girl to the ground. Just plain nuts. Again, did I mention Tom DeLay went on trial today? Did I mention that? Money laundering? Because I think it's important that we know that our buddy Tom, the hammer, I think it's important that we know the hammer is on trial. I think it's important. I'm not surprised to see this. The self-described Tea Party Nation, they sent out emails to their little minions. This past weekend, the Tea Party Nation urged their flock to support Republican House candidate Lynn Torgerson. She is running against Representative Keith Ellis, the Democrat there in Minnesota's 5th district. And why? Why would Tea Party Nation say vote for Lynn and not that? Well, I guess we already know. Why would they say vote for her? Is she a better candidate? Well, no. Is she smarter? Oh, yeah. Bet on that one. Does she have a plan? No. The reason you should support her, according to Tea Party Nation, is because she's not one of them. She's not a Muslim. And on Rachel Maddow's blog, she points out that one of the arguments that Tea Party Nation makes against Rep. Ellison is he's a Muslim. They write, quote, there are a lot of liberals. You need to be retired this year. But there are a few that I can think of more deserving than Keith Ellison. Ellison is one of the most radical members of Congress. He has zero rating from the American Conservative Union. He is the only Muslim member of Congress. He supports the Council of American Islamic Relationships. He supports Hamas. And he helped Congress send millions of dollars, if tax dollars, to terrorists in Gaza. Aside from providing absolutely no facts supporting the terrorist thing, the reality is Ellison isn't the only Muslim. There's another guy, Andre Carson from Indiana. He's Muslim as well. But as the NAACP points out, the crazy people here at Tea Party Nation, they have the third largest flock, and their shepherd. Their shepherd is a guy named Judson Phillips. You may remember Judson. Judson was the guy who earlier this year tried to rip off Tea Party convention people. The people who said, yeah, let's have a tea party, and we'll charge everybody $560 a head. So we can pay $1 million to Sarah. I mean, really, stop and think about how bad the Tea Party has been abused. I mean, I've heard the thing about Stockholm Syndrome kind of resonates, I guess, when I'm thinking of the Tea Party. You know, they've been abused for so long, and when nobody pays attention to them, they finally. And they need some attention. And it's guys like this. I mean, you know, look, I've said before, at some point we've got to reach out to the anger that middle white America is feeling. Because I'm middle white America. At some point we've got to deal with the very real anger that the American dream that we were promised. The promise that if we work hard, we will succeed. If we work hard, we will achieve the American dream. Somehow not working out. We've got to reach out to everyone and organize. That's got to happen. And we've got to stop with the divisiveness. And the only way that stops is if we wake up and realize who's been dividing us. And it's pretty simple to see because we're inundated with it constantly, especially right now. I turned on the football game the other night, and all I saw was Joe Sestak's too liberal. Dan Honorato is, you know, blah, 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 blah. You know, Joe Sestak rips the heads off of puppies. Just the most obnoxious, outrageous, insane things in these ads. And crazy begets crazy. We're not talking about issues anymore. We're throwing slogans past each other. You know, I learned something about Pat Toomey in the last debate. And it was something that was really, to me, very, very negative. The fact that his father was a union member. And he acts the way he does towards union members. He has been a guy who has done everything he can possibly do to destroy a worker's right. And all he keeps throwing up is, well, you know, Pat Toomey, I'm Pat Toomey and I'm against the Employee Free Choice Act. That guy over there, the guy who's too liberal, he wants workers to be able to join a union. And it's going to cost us 1,400 million gazillion jobs. Just pulled that one right out of the backside there. Like they do with a lot of the facts we're seeing. We have some way out far right wing think tank dream up some bizarre statistic and there it is. There it is right out there on the table for us. And once they put it out there, if you don't have the money to defend yourself, you lose. I mean, the fact that they're trying to make an admiral out to be a liberal is amazing stuff. We're right back after this with Kathleen Sebelius, Secretary of Health and Human Services. Right back.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka will be in Nevada Tuesday night for a get-out-the-vote rally in Reno in support of Senator Harry Reid. Trumka will detail Senator Reid's support for working people and the radical anti-worker views of his opponent. With the huge advantage of anonymous corporate money from outside groups, Reid's opponent is running strong in the polls. Trumka's Nevada appearance for Reid is part of a massive national AFL-CIO get-out-the-vote effort. Only one ship was serviced at the Port of Oakland on Saturday as workers shut the port down to protest at City Hall. Jesse Russell explains.
The Port of Oakland was closed by workers on Saturday as they protested in advance of sentencing in the shooting of Oscar Grant. The Longshore and Warehouse Workers Union have a long history of speaking out over concerns of injustice in the community. The workers protested in front of City Hall to call for justice in the case. They want to make sure Officer Johannes Maserly, who shot the unarmed Grant on a subway platform, is sentenced appropriately on November 5, 2010, and that he doesn't receive any special treatment because he is a police officer. Supporters of a minimum jail sentence of 14 years for Meserle are concerned he will be sent home on probation and justice won't be served. Grant was shot on January 1, 2009. The last time the workers closed the port to express an opinion was in 2008 to protest the war in Iraq.
An attempt to organize Jimmy John's sandwich shops in Minneapolis has failed by just two votes, 87 to 85. The Industrial Workers of the World had sought to represent the 200 workers at 10 Minneapolis stores who have complained of low wages. The shops that they specifically targeted are all owned by Mike Mulligan, who pays his workers the bare minimum federal wage of $7.25 per hour. The workers allege that management would require them to find their own replacement if they are sick, resulting in employees coming to work ill. According to the Center for Economic and Policy Research, the millions of French protesters who poured into the streets to oppose raising the retirement age are right. There's no need to raise the retirement age to afford their pension systems. Economist Mark Weisbrot says since France's retirement age was last set, GDP per person has increased by 45%. That productivity growth, he says, more than makes up for longer life expectancies and fewer workers supporting each retiree. And he says projected growth in France over the next 40 years is also expected to be more than sufficient to pay retirement costs without cuts. Weisbrot says it's a myth that adequate pensions cannot be sustained in France and other advanced economies. He says it's a social choice, and pension system cuts are not dictated by necessity. Weisbrot says it's perfectly reasonable to expect that as life expectancy increases, people should have longer retirements. This newscast was made possible in part by the National Education Association, the NEA, working for great public schools for every student.
Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
You know, the enemy, as we've known for some time, the big insurance companies, the big banks, the big conglomerates, the people who are making profit off of our pain and our suffering. And, you know, as we head down to the wire in this election cycle, the passions are running rampant. My Tea Party listeners, they're chomping at the bit, hoping, praying that they're going to be able to take down the big, bad, evil government. That they've constructed this bad, this evil character, this evil doer that they've got constructed in their mind. That's why I'm hoping, I got to be honest, I'm hoping that the adults in this country show up to the polls next Tuesday and stop the silliness, return us to some rational thought, maybe some civil discourse. And you look at this health care reform bill. You know, I have friends of mine who say, well, it's the government takeover. I'm going, really? Government takeover? My doctor now works for the government? How ridiculous is that?
You know, I don't want the government between me and my doctor.
But your health insurance, your health company, the insurance company's okay, right? Having a bureaucrat from the for-profit industry is just peachy keen, right? And I'm telling you, folks, the crazy is among us. Every one of these folks that you hear talking about healthcare from the Republican side of the aisle are talking about taking any progress away. And look, I'm not happy with this bill. I don't know many people who are happy with it. But it's a starting point. It's where we start this whole process and move forward. You don't tear it down. You keep moving forward. You make improvements to it. And we just, you know, there's part of me that wonders if the Republicans aren't just playing as a ploy, because they know where the money's coming from. And the money to me is really, really disturbing. I've got Kathleen Sebelius on the line. She's Secretary of Health and Human Services, also a governor, former governor of Kansas, which makes her uniquely positioned to talk about this term's election. What exactly does the Secretary of Health and Human Services do, for those who may not know right now?
Well, I'm the kind of chief health officer for the United States, and we actually operate both the Medicaid and Medicare programs, as well as have 11 different agencies from the National Institutes of Health doing cutting-edge research to the Center for Disease Control, which helps detect and track diseases and work on public health issues. And we also run the human services programs, Head Start, Early Head Start, some of the welfare to work programs, child care programs across the country.
Right. So let me ask you, because a lot of my Tea Party friends, they claim that you're the person who sits and heads up Obama's death panels. Any truth to that?
Well, as you know, Rick, first of all, that was a total misstatement from day one. There are no so-called death panels anywhere in the law. There never have been. There never will be. So I think that if people read or understood the bill, they would understand that that's the furthest thing that will happen. What the bill does in many cases is put some healthcare decisions back in the hands of patients and their doctors, and out of the hands of insurance companies, who now get to pick and choose too often who gets coverage and who doesn't, who gets treatment and who doesn't, who gets, you know, the care they need and who doesn't.
Right, you know, because I talk to a lot of my Tea Party friends, and to be honest, the more I talk to them, the crazier they sound. And these, I think the Democrats should be running on, look at what these people are saying. Look at the fantasies that are coming out here. And really pointing that out and getting people, the sane people, the adults in the room, to wake up and go, if we go the wrong way on November 2nd, it could be a very long 2 years.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, a week from today is a hugely important election. And I think in many cases the Republicans have made it very clear that where they want to go is back to the past. And when you think about where we were 2 years ago, as a country losing about 600,000 jobs a month, and rules being written by, you know, the Wall Street folks who were cashing in on people's hopes and dreams and jobs and opportunities, and we've made a lot of progress since then, but we've taken on insurance companies and student loan lenders and Wall Street folks and credit card companies, and they're not real happy with the change in the rules. But for the average folks, for the working families of Pennsylvania, we can either continue this progress and get the rules straight once and for all, get people back to work, make sure that we're looking out for the folks whose lives depend every day on bringing home a paycheck and providing health care for their families and moving forward, or we can, you know, turn the rules back over to the guys who got us into this mess in the first place.
I think it's obvious that the people who the banks and the health insurers and all those people are not happy, because you look at the amount of money that they're throwing into this race. At last count, somewhere over $250 million, was it billion dollars already? No, million dollars.
I think it's million.
$250 right. million dollars that they've pumped into a midterm election. This is unprecedented.
Well, they also, this year for the first time, a lot of that money is anonymous. So it used to be that voters knew who your friends were by who was writing you checks and could at least make a judgment call on what you were likely to do if you got elected, if your friends were the big banks and the oil companies and others. You were likely then to be more supportive of their policies. So right now we have a situation where, you know, whether it's the Chamber of Commerce, who won't even tell us if the money coming in from foreign governments is going into political campaigns, or, you know, some of the big insurance companies who would like the rules to stay just the way they were and not have anybody tell them that they have to write policies for people who actually will get sick, or they have to now extend benefits when someone is sick. They can't dump them out of the plan. So those folks would like to be back in charge again. And some of the money that's coming into this year's election, and all of it, by and large, is against Democrats, is anonymous money, so you really don't even know who's behind it.
Yeah, and that's really troubling to me on a number of levels. Let me ask you this last question I have, because I know you've got to get going. A lot of my Democratic friends are saying that the reason Democrats seem to not be running on the health care reform bill that they passed is because it didn't do enough initially to make people realize that it was something positive. There wasn't enough action up front, that most of the things that are going to be very helpful are years down the road. I'm curious what your thoughts on that are.
Well, there's no question that in 2014, which seems like a very long time away, there will be an entirely new insurance market. But in the meantime, I would say that there are a bunch of things that hit this year. And on the 23rd of September, we were able to roll out a number of the new benefits. So parents who had kids graduated from college or turning 21 now can keep those young adults on a family plan until they get to be 26. Parents who have a child with pre-existing health condition, with asthma or a cancer survivor, can now get insurance to cover that child and the treatments he or she needs. Seniors will have a wellness visit as part of their Medicare benefits and won't have to pay copays anymore for mammograms and cancer screenings, and they'll have a 50% discount in the prescription drug costs in the so-called donut hole, the big gap. So those kinds of benefits are in place right now. It's the beginning of the changes that were promised. It gets rid of some of the worst abuses of insurance companies and begins to move us in the right direction. And we're moving kind of in a strategy toward a new marketplace by 2014. But there are definitely some benefits that are kicking in this year and that people are beginning to understand are really helpful to them and their families.
Yeah, I just wish it would have been a little bit sooner, because most of the people that I talk to are uneasy. And what they're seeing in the news is they're seeing insurance companies taking advantage of the time they have left to really stick it to their policyholders.
Well, we are also giving some new resources and calling on state insurance commissioners. You know, Rick, one of the things that I think is just wrong about this bill is a lot of folks have suggested somehow it's a federal government takeover. This is really helping states to do the job they should be doing. So I used to be an insurance commissioner at a state level. I know how important it is to look at what the companies are charging and what they're actually paying as EEO salaries and in advertising costs, as opposed to what they're paying in health benefits. And those new rules are going to be in place, and we're also calling on state insurance commissioners to step up and do their job to make sure people are getting the bang for the buck that they're paying and making sure they're getting the coverage that they paid for.
All right. Secretary Sebelius, I appreciate your taking a little time for us. Keep up the fight there on the trail, and I'm hoping for positive things on November 2nd.
Well, me too, and keep reminding folks that, you know, the election a week away is a critical time, and they need to show up and they need to vote.
Let's hope so.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services, Kathleen Sebelius, I appreciate her being on the program. And look, I think she's spot on. We need to get out. We need to vote. We need to participate. I'm hoping we see more than just 1 in 5 people showing up to the polls this election cycle. I'm really hoping. We're going to take a quick break right here. Back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Right. On the talk.
Just make us be brave. Make us play nice.
Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Get government off our backs. We're going to take our country back.
That sounds good, but is this the time for bumper sticker solutions? The Republican Tea Party Pledge to America says cut taxes for the rich and cut government. Some have even said close the government down. Then what? Food and mine inspection gone? Forget about Border Patrol or keeping terrorists locked up. And returning veterans? Give them a cheap voucher instead of a qual VA hospital. Let's dump in the rivers and pollute the air again. The teabagger chanting, keep your hands off my Medicare. Sorry, Medicare will be whacked hard. The same for Social Security. Schools, police, and fire departments will disintegrate. So Republican Tea Party folks, then what? We're all angry and frustrated. But when you vote, remember who got us into this mess in the first place.
Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees at AFGE.org.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share of wants. The Rick Smith Show.
Fire it up. Fire up the chair. Especially down there in Texas. Fire up the chair. Where's George W. Bush when we need him? Yeah, well, get him out there on his ranch. You know, the ranch with no animals. See, son, you get on a horse. Oh, wait a minute. The ranch don't have no horse. Don't have no animals on the Bush ranch. Because George thinks you can milk a horse. But I want George in the governor's chair so we can fly Tom DeLay. Because as I've been saying all day, today began his trial for money laundering and conspiracy. For illegally funneling $190,000 of corporate money through the Republican National Committee. Oh, I hope he goes to jail. Nothing would make me happier. Nothing would make me happier than to see him dance with the, well, there'll be no stars in there. Maybe he'll be the star. There'll be some guys dancing with him in there. I'll guarantee you that. And he'll be dreaming about the next people we're going to talk about. You want to talk about safety first on the job? No matter what the job? Because we all want safe workplaces, right? We all want to come home, you know, in relatively the same health that we went to work in. Well, from the UK Telegraph, evidently women in Spain touting for customers, as they put it, touting for customers on a rural highway outside of a couple of towns in Catalonia have been told to don the yellow fluorescent bibs, you know, like our construction workers wear, or pay fines of 40 euros or $56 under road traffic laws. Yes, we're talking about prostitutes. The hookers there have to wear fluorescent bibs while on the stroll, if you will. Police claim that the sex workers on the LL11 road are not being specifically targeted because of what they do, but because they pose a danger to drivers. The prostitutes are in breach of a 2004 law, which states pedestrians on major highways and hard shoulders must wear the high visibility garments. A spokesman for the regional police force said in the past couple of months, the prostitutes have been fined for two reasons, for not wearing the reflective jacket and for creating danger on the public highways. Can you see that? Imagine you're driving up and down Route 11 and seeing women walk across the street with the fluorescent. I think that'd be good for business, don't you? But this is Spain. This is Spain, where one in four men surveyed have admitted to having paid for sex at one point or another. Estimates somewhere in Spain there are 300,000 women working as prostitutes because it's not illegal. George Carlin always had a funny bit on that. He's like, selling's legal. Blanking's legal. Why isn't selling blanking legal? Always made sense to me. Another story that caught my attention today, GlaxoSmithKline, the British drug giant, has agreed to pay $750 million to settle criminal and civil complaints that the company for years knowingly sold contaminated baby ointments and ineffective antidepressants, according to the AP. The latest in a growing number of whistleblower lawsuits that drug makers have settled with multi-million dollar fines. Altogether, GlaxoSmithKline sold 20 drugs with questionable safety that were made at a huge plant in Puerto Rico that for years was rife with contamination. Cheryl Eckert, she is the whistleblower. She was the company's quality control manager, and she said, "Hey, look, we got some major problems here. Please fix it. I'm doing my job. Over here, woohoo, we got some problems. Waving the red flag. There's a hanky, whatever. You know, like in the cartoons with the pointing fingers and all that stuff." So what'd they do? Did they come and say, what is it? What is it, Cheryl? What have you saved us from? What good, valiant employee, what have you done for us? Well, for her role, they fired her. There's the door, honey. Bye. And now 750. Oh, amazing stuff, isn't it? $750 million. And she tried. She tried to say, hey, you know, there's some problems here. So my question then becomes, was it cost effective? Did they make more than the $750 million by selling tainted baby ointment? Were they able to recoup their losses by selling ineffective antidepressants? You know, for people who have very serious problems, that they're taking your drug with the hopes that, you know what, I'm going to feel a little bit better if I just take these drugs. Amazing stuff. And because I honestly don't believe that they're ever fined enough. And the story went on to say, well, we don't know if we killed anybody, but, you know, hey, yeah, it happens. Hard to find out. Hard to know. Hard to know if those depressed people were, you know, just not getting any better and they decided, you know what, I'm going to take the long walk off the short pier. Absolutely disgusting. A new study by the Progressive Constitutional Accountability Center compares how the Chamber of Commerce has fared before the Supreme Court under Chief Justice Roberts as compared to the Burger Court. And they found some what I would call disturbing trends. And we've talked about this where there have been other people who have looked at this. And here's another one of these examples of it coming out to show just how far the right this court has moved. And what we've seen is we've seen this rightward march because nobody's willing to stand up and say stop. This report finds today's moderates are about as likely to favor powerful corporate lobby positions as conservative Justice William Rehnquist was in 1980. Think about this for a second. The most liberal on today's court would be considered a conservative back in the 80s. The conservative majority is now significantly more likely to favor corporate interests than most pro-corporate members of the court over the past 25 years. You may remember a guy named Lewis Powell. And I've talked about the good former Supreme Court Justice Lewis Powell on a number of occasions. He was on the Burger Court. And in fact, at the time, he was the most pro-corporate member of that court. And I would guess from the findings that are in this report that he would be far to the left of this Roberts court. You may remember Paul. He's the guy who wrote the free enterprise system is under attack memo for the Chamber of Commerce. Basically, what was their blueprint? Well, their attack plan back in 1971. On how they could manipulate the American political system and the judicial system. And how they could, you know, take over. And they did. And they did a masterful job. And I anybody who hasn't read the Powell Memorandum, you need to spend, it's only a couple minute read. I think it's like 8-10 pages tops. But it has laid out the attack strategy that the right has, you know, masterfully executed. And, you know, and I'm trying to tell people this because we're trying to build a lot of that infrastructure here, you know, 40 years too late. Because this is a tough gig. You know, doing a progressive program is we don't have people who write content for us. Everything on this program, I cite where I got my story, I tell you my opinion, and we can have a discussion on that. But the right-wing talk shows, they have got such an amazing infrastructure. I mean, an absolutely amazing infrastructure where you don't have to do any prep work. It's done for you by the think tanks. It's all done right for you. They've actually got organizations who book all your guests for you. You just say, hey, I do a talk show. Oh, okay, boom, 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 boom. I'm on the right-wing list. You should see the number of guests I can get in a day. They got thousands of people to choose from who are just dying to get on programs so they can make their living because the right has spent a lot of money, billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars. And if you go back and if you do read the Powell memo, his final suggestion, his statesmanlike act that he was asking business in the U.S. to do was to donate 10% of their advertising budget to the Chamber of Commerce or to somebody who would then divvy up. So if you had an advertising budget of $10, 10% would be a buck. Say, you know, just send a buck over to here. For every $10 you spend on advertising, a buck goes over here. And we're going to take that buck and we're going to start speakers bureaus. We're going to start publishing companies. We're going to start think tanks. We're going to start radio hosts, TV hosts, and you name it. We're going to assault the mainstream media. We're going to take it over. And they did. They spent hundreds of millions, billions of dollars building this infrastructure. And if you do a right-wing show, if you say, you know what, I'm going to be a good conservative because I don't want to think. I don't want to have to think for myself. Send me all my material. Let me just read right off the teleprompter. They'll do it. It's there for you. Every one of these think tanks, man, they've got programs set for you. And they've got speakers, and they've got guests, and they've got programs for you to get money out of. And it's really a lucrative gig. And I've often said, if I were a mixed-gendered black Hispanic woman, there is no question I would be a conservative. Because I could make millions of dollars a year just babbling garble. All I got to do is put conservative black Hispanic woman under my title. And it's like, oh, yeah, great. Come on. You first. They'd usher you right in. Here are the keys to the kingdom. Which is why you see so many of these conservative talk show hosts who you try and, you know, they're not the brightest bulbs in the box. But everything's right there for them. And they've trained their listeners. They train, you know, megadiddos, Rush. Agree with everything you said. That's right. There are more acres of forest here than when Christopher Columbus arrived. I'll tell you that. Did you hear that? There are more acres of forest here than when Columbus arrived. Limbaugh actually said that. But he's right 99.976453% of the time. And the megadiddo people bounce their head, go, huh? He sure is. Yes, he is. Rush is my friend. I love Rush. Oh, it's just nuts. But if you go back and you read this Powell thing, they lay it out perfectly. And last week, Peter DeFazio, a Democratic representative from Oregon, he told the Huffington Post that the Supreme Court has done a tremendous disservice to the United States of America. They have done more, he said, to undermine our democracy with their Citizens United decision than all of the Republican operatives in the world in this campaign. They've opened the floodgates, and personally, I'm investigating articles of impeachment against Justice Roberts for purging during his Senate hearings, which he said he would be a judicial, would not be a judicial activist, and he would not overturn precedents. That, my friends, is exactly what Citizens United did. And when we come back, talk a couple real quick minutes about what this corporate money, is buying. Let's see what they're getting for their money. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
I'll never bend. I'm with you now until the end.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
If you look at the whole flock of 535 Congress critters, it's hard not to giggle or break out in uncontrollable sobs at the thought that, oh my God, this is the United States Congress. As Peggy Lee sang years ago, is that all there is? Well, no. Within the manure pile, there are quite a few genuine gems, and one of the finest is a fellow who consistently stands for common sense and the common good. He's Russ Feingold, U.S. Senator from Wisconsin. Russ is a Democrat, but really he's a populist maverick who has refused to go along to get along, even when that means going against his own party and against what the political consultants tell him is his own best interests. For example, he was the lone Senate vote against the autocratic Liberty-Busting Patriot Act in 2001. Feingold also has had the stuff to vote against Obama's escalation of the misguided war in Afghanistan. And not only did he oppose the 2008 bailout of Wall Street banksters, but he also said no this year to Obama's Wall Street regulatory reforms, blasting them as too weak and meek. So this sensible senator is now targeted for defeat by the moneyed elites. They found a multimillionaire corporate Republican who made a fortune in plastic to use confused Tea Party forces as a ramrod to oust Russ. The corporate contender attacks Social Security as a giant Ponzi scheme, calls health care reform the greatest assault on our freedom in my lifetime, and insists that the science of global climate change is unproven. If this guy gets any dumber, we'd have to water him twice a day. This is Jim Hightower saying, but he's a rich corporate honcho, backed by the moneyed power, so he could join the congressional manure pile. If we the people don't rally around one of our own. Connect with Russ Feingold at www.russfeingold.org.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
The Blue Blood Sea Red. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome to the
the new Dark Ages, the Dark Ages of a desperation class.
Which, if you think of what's going on here, folks, is exactly what they're creating in the country. They're creating despair and anger and frustration and people who are willing to go get the pitchforks and march into the streets. For what reason? No real idea. And in fact, they know exactly where they want you to go. And I see this group, a very conservative 527 Republican group, big money funders, the people who are behind such groups like the Virginia Liberty Fund and Storm Chasers and American Spirit Fund. You can't get more American than American Spirit Fund. But they're one of these far-out right-wing political action groups. And they've started another group, Latinos for Reform. And Latinos for Reform came out with this ad.
It's an election year, so here come more promises about immigration reform. Last time, President Obama and the Democratic leadership made a commitment that immigration reform would be passed within a year. But 2 years have gone by and nothing. Not even a vote in Congress. With a Democratic president and supermajorities in both chambers of Congress, they have no excuses. Clearly, the Democratic leadership betrayed us. And now, when they need our votes, they are at it again with more empty promises. Aren't you tired of politicians playing games with your future? Do you really think it will be different this time? They had 2 years to do something. It was all talk and no action. This November, we need to send a message to all politicians. If they didn't keep their promise on immigration reform, then they can't count on our vote. Democratic leaders must pay for their broken promises and betrayals. If we just go on supporting them again this November, they will keep playing games with our future and taking our vote for granted. Don't vote this November. This is the only way to send them a clear message. You can no longer take us for granted. Don't vote.
Don't vote. They promised us immigration. They betrayed us. Empty promises. Games with our future.
Reform is responsible for the content of the-
All talk, no action. Send them, Democrats, a message. Democrats must pay.
And how are we going to make them pay? By doing nothing. We're going to stay home. Stay home. Don't bother with it. Don't worry about it. Stay home. They are going to spend $80,000 to air that ad on Univision. They have a Spanish version of it. They put it in English for those of us who are only can speak one language. And I got to be honest, you know, in speaking that their language, they're much, much quicker. The ad that they had for Latino voters was a minute long. For us, the slow people, it was a minute and 31 seconds. So they're obviously much more efficient. And obviously, the Republicans think not the brightest bulbs in the box because they're, and I'm hoping the Latino voters understand this. The people who held up all of the things that were in the ad were the very people who sponsored the ad, the party of no. And what's interesting to me is it's not a call to action. It's not a call to, hey, you know, really make them pay and vote for us Republicans. Because the Republicans know they've done nothing to help themselves with Latino voters. So all they can hope for is that people stay home, which is the same thing they're trying to do with the union vote. You know, Obama didn't give you your Employee Free Choice Act. Obama didn't turn the economy around. Obama didn't do what he said he was going to do. So you union people, just stay home. It's the message. When in reality, we do know that the administration created jobs. We do know that a lot of the promises that they made, they've kept. They passed health care reform. We may not like what was passed, but something got passed. Now we work from this point forward to fix it, to make it perfect. You know, nothing started off as perfect. No piece of legislation we've ever had was, that's it, we never need to do another thing to it. We've never had that happen. We've never had to worship the legislation. Well, we worked at it. You amended it. You fixed it. You found problems with it. It's a work in progress. But what the Republicans are saying is, well, what we need to do is repeal. Repeal and replace it with pay or die. We want to keep that. And I've heard this over and over again the last couple of weeks. And even the Obama administration is trying to defend it, saying that, well, you know, the employer-based healthcare system is kind of collapsing. And Obama's saying, well, no. The administration's saying, no, it's the employer-based system's going to be fine. I don't want an employer-based system. I think people with rational thought don't want an employer-based system. You know, I'm in the process of considering changing jobs. I'm going to have to change health insurance companies. There are a lot of questions I have. Well, you know, my wife and I are fairly healthy. Our kids are fairly healthy. Well, our kids are, you know, kids. You know, what happens when you go from one to the next? You know, how does that work out? You know, we're going to find out because I've been very fortunate. I've had, you know, the same job 18 years. Never had to change health insurance companies. Never had to deal with that problem. I've always had good, solid health care through. Not that for everybody. I think everybody should have 30. Because you cannot possibly be in the middle class in this country without it. It's just not possible. It's not possible to be in the middle class in this country if one illness throws you out. If one illness sends you into destitution. It's not possible. And I love the Republican arguments. I love the fact that they feel emboldened to tell us that they're against the minimum wage. I love the fact that they're emboldened to say unemployment compensation is unconstitutional.
It's all the people who be listening who've been unemployed in the last 2.5 years, since Bush's recession in 2008, in the last 2 years. Where do you think the extensions came from? Where do you think the multiple extensions came from to help feed your family, to help keep a roof over your head? Do you think the Republicans did this? Absolutely not. And I love this whole argument that, well, if we didn't spend that $814 billion, 40% of which were tax cuts, which nobody seems to bother to mention, because those tax cuts were supposed to create jobs. Again, another fallacy. It didn't happen because they weren't targeted properly. If you want to stimulate an economy, you target those tax cuts to the people who spend 100% of the money they take in. Those people at the bottom of the economic scale. In fact, what I would have done is I would have increased the earned income tax credits to give poor people a little bit more money so that they would spend a little bit more. That's a smart thing to do. But we can't talk about this in this country. But if you look at that stimulus, what it did, 40% tax cuts, tax breaks. There was a bunch of money put forth for unemployment compensation. There was a bunch of money put forth to help the states meet their balanced budgets. Because, like the state of Pennsylvania, and I don't know what genius figured this out, but we've got a balanced budget problem. We cannot run a debt during times of crisis. Which, as we talked about the other night, can we live on the idea that only during good times will we have a police department? Only during good times will we be able to pay teachers? Only during good times will we be able to have fire departments and libraries and road repairs and plowed roads and all of the things that government does, 911 operators? Only during good times is that when we have those things? When we can afford to pay for them only? Because I don't know if you've noticed, we've had a serious economic downturn. And revenues are down. So do you make it worse by saying we've got to tighten our belt and lay off all these people, causing more distress and more trouble for the state? The more people you lay off, the more people you got to pay on unemployment. But in this country, you can't have a rational discussion like that. You can't talk about this stuff. It's slogans. Tax cuts create jobs. Or job-killing tax increases. Slogans. That's all we get. Platitudes. I can't tell you how many friends I have who just love to throw their bumper stickers at me. Obamacare. Death panels. You know, I was going to ask Sebelius if she'd put me on one of the, if there were death panels, can you put me on? I've got a list of people I'd like to get rid of. But there are no death panels, much to my chagrin. We should get Obama phone. I want my death panels. I want my sloganeering friends gone. But there aren't. No death panels. Anyway. But this stimulus, the money that we spent, stopped us from falling. Stopped the free fall. Stopped the devastation. You know, the Bush administration bailed out the banks. And this is how I put this, pretty simply. Bush bailed out the bankers. He bushed out his buddies. Obama helped the people. And while I'm not thrilled with some of the policy that's come out, I don't think the bank thing went far enough. I don't think financial reform went far enough. I don't think health care went far enough. They're starts. We're moving in the right direction. And to me, that's what's important. Because, you know, and look, I'm telling you right now, we make the wrong choice in a little less than a week, next Tuesday. There are going to be deep, wide, and painful cuts. And the economy will continue to go down. I'm telling you this right now, there's no question in my mind that we will then double dip recess. No question in my mind whatsoever. When people like Rand Paul and the woman who's not smart enough to touch herself there in Delaware, and John Racy and West Virginia and the guy in Wisconsin, Johnson and Miller in Alaska. Once they come into the Senate, do you think anything helping the people is going to get through? Absolutely not. They are bought, paid for, signed, sealed, delivered, baby, they're yours. They are the corporate special interest. The senator from West Virginia is no longer going to be the senator from West Virginia. He's going to be, Gear Industries. He's the senator from Gear Industries. Oh, boy. God help us if everything goes the wrong way Tuesday. Let's take a quick break. We're right back after this to wrap things up.
For and by We the Working People. The Rick Smith Show.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save dust of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Hello, I'm David Philman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. A union of over 1.4 million strong and growing, AFSCME is gaining improvements in the workplace all across America. And right here in the Commonwealth, more than 95,000 AFSCME members make Pennsylvania happen. Highways, libraries, hospitals, parks, offices, prisons, classrooms, museums, courtrooms. You'll find AFSCME members at work in all these places and many more.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
Today's AFSCME members take on public service jobs as diverse as they are, not for the recognition, but for a better Pennsylvania. For more information, please visit our website at AFSCME13.org. Labor is changing, so is your labor union. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happen!
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wild man say revolution starts now.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out our website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I don't know if you saw this. The Arizona Republic had a story today. Republican lawmakers in 15 states last Tuesday announced a nationwide effort to change the way the 14th Amendment is interpreted and stop granting citizenship to babies born in the U.S. to illegal immigrants. Let me stop right here. Maybe I'm mistaken on this. Maybe I am. Is this not the job of the Supreme Court? Isn't that what we pay them for? And I know they're really the pro-corporate Supreme Court. I know they're in the pocket of big business. But don't you think that this is their area of expertise? Don't you think this is what they should be doing? I think it is. I think it's their job to interpret the 14th Amendment. No, for some reason I thought that's how our series of checks and balances worked out. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, a national coalition to call state legislators for legal immigration is coordinating the effort. Arizona State Senator Russell Pierce said Kansas lawyer Chris Kobach, who helped draft Arizona's tough immigration law, now on appeal in the federal courts, is working with him and Republican State Representative John Kavanaugh to draft a bill that all the states could use as a model on the citizenship issue. Pierce said a draft bill is written and will be ready for consideration when the Arizona legislative session starts in January. He would not say, however, exactly how they will propose denying citizenship, but said the legislation is not retroactive. Previous attempts in Arizona have focused on tinkering with the state-issued birth certificate. So if you make things really, really hard for people to get birth certificates, like, you know, I don't know, throwing their parents out of the country, you know, the citizen, you know, the people may say, well, you know, maybe it's not worth it. When asked how the state would prove citizenship in a delivery room, Pierce said delayed birth certificates could be given to allow parents time to gather proof of citizenship. State issue birth certificates, but citizenship is a federal issue. The 14th Amendment ratified. Oh, wow. The 14th Amendment ratified in 1868 states that all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state where they reside. The amendment's primary intent was to guarantee citizenship to African Americans, particularly former slaves. But the question of whether the authors also intended to allow children of illegal immigrants to become children has been a matter of debate, according to the article. You know, and right here in our area, we got four people who have signed on to it. Bill Schuster, Joe Pitts, Tim Murphy, and of course Todd Platts, who have all thrown their name onto it. You know, I stop and I think about this for a minute. And not being a constitutional scholar, I think of precedents. I think of how things have been for the last 100 years. And I wonder if it's this easy to overturn. Now, I've heard some folks say, you know, maybe we can work out a deal. We'll work out a deal with you. You give up corporate personhood, and we'll give up actual personhood. What do you think about that? Amazing, amazing stuff. We love to tell ourselves here in the U.S. that we are the number one. We're number one. We love to put that finger up, like we've won some championship. We've you know, while standing on home plate, somehow we think we hit the home run, even though we didn't have a bat in our hand. We'd like to say this is the best place in the world to live. Well, according to CNN, Norway leads the 2010 list ranking of prosperity. Of the 110 nations around the world, led in the London Analytical Center Legum Institute. Norway also topped the list in 2009 as well. The Prosperity Index seeks to understand how economic fundamentals, health, freedom, governance, safety, education, entrepreneurial opportunity, and social capital influence a country's economic growth and happiness of its citizens. According to the group, Europe dominates the top 10, taking 6 of the spots. The U.S. and Canada represent North America. Of course, the U.S. is number 10 of the bottom nations. What? 8 of the 10 bottom nations are from Africa, with some Zimbabwe being the worst. And you've got Norway, Denmark, Finland, Australia, New Zealand, Sweden, Canada, Switzerland, the Netherlands. And what do all of these people have in common, you ask? They all have cradle-to-grave health care. That's not on the back of their employers. Interesting, interesting stuff. Interesting, interesting. Kay Schiller, these people are the folks who watch the home industry. They claim that housing prices are down in 15 of 20 markets. The number, they say, 1.7 percent rise in 20 cities composite over a year-to-year basis, which is much worse than expected. Home prices were down in 15 of 20 markets. That's the real story. S&P's David Blitzer says there's no way to sugarcoat this report, and bear in mind, this is before all the foreclosure gate stuff happened. And like we talked about earlier, you know, look at this foreclosure stuff. It comes straight down to greed. It comes down to not the fact that you know, people took out loans, not that people were irresponsible. It comes down to the institution was broken. The institution was greedy. And I got to be honest, I had a friend who probably I coached my daughter's T-ball team a couple years back, and I met this guy, and we became friends, who that was his job. He was one of these mortgage hustlers, his words, because he was out there fighting, scrambling to get the mortgages in. And it was a competitive gig. And he was making about six figures a year with barely a high school education, because he was able to out-hustle the hustlers. He had a good rep, he got people in, and he wrote mortgages as fast as anybody. You know, don't worry about verifying income, don't worry about savings, don't worry about if the people can afford it. Just churn them out. Churn them out, because you know what? He's not holding the mortgage, it's not his. And what they would do, they'd sell them off. Because there were investors just ready to buy it. Because they were told these are top-rated investment opportunities. And you know what? They got bitten. And in a true capitalist society, it wouldn't be the people at the bottom who would be harmed. It would be the capitalists who were harmed. It would be the investor class who was harmed. You know, what I think is really interesting, and you need to think about this, all of this stuff was backed by insurance. So no matter what bet you made, there was an insurance company there backing your bets. I wish, honestly, I wish I could go to Las Vegas and have the pit boss say, Rick, go do whatever you want to do. Go out there, go to the, you ever play craps? No? Here's a boatload of money. Go ahead, on us. Don't worry about it. It's all insured. Play blackjack? Not very well. Ah, what the heck? Go on. Go play a bunch. We got it covered. That little spinny thing with the table, with the little wheel and the ball that bounces around. You ever do that? Not very well. Go on. Don't worry about it. It's on us. How many people do you think would say, gee, you know, maybe I shouldn't do that? Nobody. Everybody go, all right, well, you're covering it. If it's on the house, which is what our mortgage industry was. It was on the house. And who was the house? The taxpayer. Because they knew they were covered. They knew they were insured. Look, you know, the capitalists who tell us that they're these great capitalists, they're real socialists. The very thing that they're claiming that we are. Sad, sad stuff. Have a great night. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickssmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.